Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome back to another edition of Leave It in the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Dave's on vacation, so we're going to be doing the patching in here on Leave It in the Ring. If you want to call in and start talking to us right away, the phone lines are open, 347-215-7598. Come on down, man. Let's talk 3 hours of boxing talk here on Leave It in the Ring. You know, so last week we had the fights. Everson Lara had his fight with Freddie Hernandez, a much tougher fight than most of us were expecting to happen. There was some fouling in the fight. There was a little bit in what I was kind of witnessing. To me, there was a little bit of struggling in Lara's part. I mean, here you had a guy who hadn't fought in some time, should be and is mostly considered by most experts and fans out there that watch boxing religiously as a step below Lara. But you were able to see that a guy that was throwing punches, he was landing. And he was landing frequently and at will at some point. You know, it started to get ugly when Lara started using the head, started, you know, diving in, doing the Ortiz Superman move, and started to hold on quite a bit. And I had to sit back, and I really just sat there and watched. And at some moment in time, we've heavily criticized Canelo for not stepping up. I don't know if I'm gonna be one of the first, but I'm gonna be one of many that say that I think that Canelo can beat him. I saw a lot of mistakes that Lara had that Canelo can capitalize on. One thing is that Canelo is more precise with his punches. He uses his punches in an economical way that it's gonna just capitalize for him only. You know, he doesn't just focus on one area. He makes sure that he covers all around the field, and that for me kind of spelled that Lara would have problems and probably would revert to fouling against him the way he was doing it with Freddie Hernandez. But I was a bit surprised, man. I don't know how surprised my co-host Gabriel Montoya was with this fight, but I was really a bit surprised that it went on that long and it got that ugly in the later rounds. Gabe?
What's up, man? I actually got it on right now. I wasn't that surprised. I mean, styles make fights, you know. It was a good fight. It was a funky fight in terms of the way their styles meshed. I mean, everybody going crazy about the headbutts. I mean, it's nothing new when a southpaw faces an orthodox guy. And look at the way he was coming in. I mean, they're both kind of aggressive and coming at each other. I just think, I don't know. I would like to see Lara in with Canelo because I think
I would too.
Two very intelligent men. Now the low blow here with Lara was a little bad. But it would be two high IQ'd fighters going at it. I think Canelo is smarter and better than he's been given credit for. And he's been developed the way, you know, a lot of Mexican fighters are. They fight a ton of guys because they don't have an amateur career. They turn into men right there in the ring. And either guy turns into an opponent or he turns a corner like Canelo has and becomes a champion. Or certainly, you know, a title holder that's on the verge of becoming a champion. He's got to prove himself against all the other title holders, my opinion, in order to be that. Lara is a guy who's very experienced as an amateur. He knows exactly who he is. He's starting to really understand himself as a pro, becoming a little more aggressive, a lot more action-packed, risking a little more, and that's going to mean coming inside and head clashes and all that stuff and clinches. And Freddie Hernandez on this night, to me, was a guy that I don't think he's in either their league. That's why he didn't win. But he's a professional fighter, and he had pride. And I think the night that he lost to Berto, I think that's, you know, fight fans are always, we're just trying to remind him of that one fight. He's had a bunch of other ones where he didn't get blown out, and he's had a lot when he's actually won. I think his pride showed, his professionalism, his tools were not all the way up to the task, but they were enough to trouble Lara, and it was to his credit. I didn't see the fight in a negative light at all. A lot of people seemed to really kind of crucify Lara for not blowing the guy out the way Berto did, or not being as exciting as he should be. You know, fights are fights. It's chaos, and they play out the way they do.
You know, I'm not crucifying him. The only thing that I would have to go back with is in something that you said about the headbutts. You're absolutely right. Headbutts happen when you have a southpaw facing an orthodox fighter, but there's no way of excusing that flying headbutt that he threw at the, I think it was the fifth or sixth round. That was just really weird, you know, and that just kind of told me that he's the kind of guy that if you do smother him up, he's going to try to get you off of him, you know, and these are some of the tactics that some guys that have amateur background, they're going to try to get away with, you know. I've seen amateur fighters use their head because they have their headgear to kind of push their heads off the other guy's head to give them some space and some, you know, some room there so they can land some punches and buy him some time. But that's the only thing I think some fans were kind of upset and they were kind of odd about because of what we saw there. But I honestly want to see the Canelo fight just that much more, because it only told me this. You had a guy like Freddie Hernandez, which we do have to applaud, and we do have to recognize that he did come to fight. He showed his professionalism. He did show his heart as a warrior, and he really was there to win. He wasn't there just to collect the check like some guys that have been known to do that. But it just showed me that Lara can be in a good, fun, exciting fight, you know, and some people in the beginning weren't so much in the cheering stands that they would want to see Lara versus Canelo. Now I think everybody's tone is a little bit different. I know mine is. I like to see this fight because it is a winnable fight for Canelo. At the same time, you know, Lara just does he shows and proves that he's going to give fits to anybody that decides to step in the ring with him. You know, and we talk about that word deserving, which I really hate the word deserve, but if we had to say and throw it out there and use it loosely, the word deserve, I think Lara deserves the shot. I think he deserves that payday. I think he deserves that exposure. Is it going to be that kind of exposure for both guys where it's going to bring tons of credibility out there, where it can draw them, you know, more pay-per-views or make them that attraction that Golden Boy is hoping to make Canelo? No, but it's definitely going to give him the experience factor of putting under his belt, so that some folks will say, well, he did step it up. And when he did step it up, you know, he shined or he didn't shine. Those are the questions myself as a fight fan want to know about. You know, I know that the name Mayorga is being thrown out there by Golden Boy, and I did tweet it out there. I said, thanks a lot, James Kirtland. You know, whatever the money that you were asking for or whatever it was, you left us with a dead body that is a talking head. That's what I look at Ricardo Mayorga. He's a talking head. He's not a fighter anymore. He's just a talking head.
You know, it's a weird thing because I'm in the midst of writing this thing, and I actually said on Twitter that tonight my story would be out tonight. And the more I'm looking at it, like, you know, like within the next hour I started working leading into the show. That's why, you know, it's actually a much more complex thing. And it's very strange because, you know, Mike Miller is the lawyer for James Kirkland. He's the co-manager along with Cameron Duncan of James. And suddenly there was this Curtis Meeks guy, the advisor, showed up. And all of a sudden he's asking James, you know, he was on our show. He agrees with the fight. And then the next day it's, you know, a no-go. My shoulder hurts. And Curtis Meeks is asking for like $2.5 million. And there's no – it's just very strange. What I'm working on is moving Kirkland down. The WBC moved him down from number one to number two. Miguel Cotto is now number one. And Lara and Vanas Marozsian are fighting for the eliminator spot to be the mandatory to Canelo. I'm just trying to figure out, like, you know, how all this is – this has happened.
I don't talking.
Golden Boy said ask the WBC. But what's weird to me is that, and I can't get any of these questions answered because Golden Boy won't talk to me. It's very frustrating because I'm just trying to do right by their fighter. and ran right by whatever happened. But tell me if this seems weird to you. It's like Curtis Meeks comes back with, no, we want $2.5 million.
Right.
And suddenly the fight is just off. And it doesn't seem like there's a negotiation period. It's just like, oh, he wants that much. You know, we're not going to do that. He's out of the running. Kirkland's going to rehab and be ready in October. But in which case, they could have, you know, Golden Boy, with all the problems with this date, they could have just moved Canelo to early October, say, do the pay-per-view on Showtime, do it with Kirkland, who said he would be ready by then, and, you know, negotiate a price, and let's get this done, because he is the number one contender to the belt. You know, right or wrong, he is. He just happens to be that guy. That's per the WBC's rules. But instead what happens is no negotiations. There's this big fight, you know, over this September 15th date, and Kirkland's just out. He's now moved down by the WBC, who is apparently, you know, I don't know, they've been sent a letter. I have that letter at this point. That's kind of where I'm at. And now we're getting Mayorga thrown in the mix. I don't know if you noticed, but the WBC throughout, like, people they were fine with, and one of the people they were fine with fighting Canelo was Asselino Freitas, who's just, you know, beat the Brazilian Rocky
right.
at 154 pounds. But, like, really? Like, I don't understand what's going on. Like, I'm not judging it. It just seems weird. And here you go with, you know, the Heyman-Golden Boy connection, you know, that whole, like, silent merger is what it looks like almost. You know, they signed Arizandy Lara this week. Now he's fighting, you know, he's going to be in the purse bid with Vonis, which that fight's not going to happen.
Right.
Because of the top-ranked Golden Boy thing. So you kind of wonder where that's going to go. Is it because now Miguel Cotto inexplicably is number one, 154 for the WBC? Are we going to see Lara versus Cotto? I mean, is this the historic announcement that they're all going to make? It's interesting things that are going on between Heyman and Golden Boy right now. You know, you can throw Showtime in that mix because they're probably going to televise it all. And if people want their sport to be UFC'd, well, this is probably a good look at what that would be like.
Sadly, it's true. Sadly, you know, I mean, it's...
Yeah, you know, we don't, dark cloud on you, but...
Right. No. I know. No, it's... we always enjoy the dark cloud when it comes around, you know.
It's an odd picture. It's an odd picture. Yeah, I'm sorry it was a little rambling. That's how I tend to get when I'm in the midst of writing a story. I'm figuring it out as I say it out loud, but
right.
It's an odd picture, you know. You kind of go, okay, so I guess maybe Floyd Cotto 2 in Madison Square Garden, you know, in December will probably be one announcement. Canelo Mayorga will be part of that. Cotto Lara will probably come later after Vonis and you know, Top Rank and Golden Boy say, we're not making this fight. And, you know, Vonis will probably be moved even further out of the picture because he's refusing yet another fight or his company won't do the fight. And so we'll get Lara versus somebody, you know, maybe Austin Trout. And that'll be the tournament.
Yeah, and that would be the tournament. And, I mean, they have to do something here. I mean, whatever they're trying to figure out, it's just a big mess. It's a big mess, in my opinion.
I mean, I'll take the other point of view is that, you know, maybe this brings some sort of uniformity. These aren't bad fights. You know, Heyman, I don't know if you read that New York Times thing, but there was a quote, I guess, attributed to him saying that, you know, if I could, I could take over boxing like that, you know, like tomorrow. And I don't know, his fighters get paid very well.
Right.
Which is great. I love it. We're going to actually have two Heyman fighters on tonight. It's about a minute. Chris Pearson and then in about another hour, Gary Russell will join us. I'm not an anti-Heyman guy, I would say. I just kind of wonder... I mean, are they kind of creating a league and by kind of streamlining all this stuff into one channel, one promoter, you know, and then like one manager stable of fighters? It's very interesting. They're all talented fighters. It's kind of interesting to watch. It's like a silent takeover in a sense. You know, Steven Espinoza, lead counsel for Golden Boy, is now running Showtime. And you know, what everybody said wouldn't happen, it's pretty much happening.
Yeah, it is. It's scary. It's just scary to a point, though, that you know we're having as tough as a time, regardless of how the sport is kind of spread out in a different type of you know game board. It being all in one in a monopoly, you know, if we have our complaints about what is going, what is being done now, and we've had promises from promoters like we're going to clean up the sport, having it now under one umbrella, I'm just wondering, how clean is it going to be, and how often are we really going to be able to get the fights that we're asking for to watch? Because there's got to be an agenda for a manager. You know what I mean? I mean, if you got eight of the best fighters in the world, and out of those eight, three of them are in the same division, you got to work hard for one of those a little bit more. You know, and there's no, I mean, you know, you don't want to have favoritism, but there is. There is favoritism. So that's what kind of leaves me where the drive of a manager that needs to do his job, I think individually they should have, each fighter should have a management, because there's conflict of interest there that you want to make sure they avoid, which is the interest is keeping three of their of a signed fighter undefeated, because you make more money that way. You're pocketing more money. That's where I'm just kind of like, I don't know about all that, man. I mean...
Well, I guess also it's just you're cutting off. Really, the ultimate thing here is the fans. I mean, what they want. We're missing out on so many good fights. Both companies are to blame for this, you know, because, I mean, Top Rank's kind of their own channel. So, you know, I'm not saying, you know, Golden Boy is evil or, you know, Top Rank is God. None of that. It's just kind of, we're just kind of watching something happen that is, something that they openly have talked about. Oscar talked about, I want to sign every fighter. And yeah, it would be nice if it's streamlined. Richard Schaefer's been on, I guess, it said, you know, that he'd be happy UFCing or treating writers the way Dana White would in the UFC. And speaking as one that's being treated that way, you know, I mean, that's a whole segment of fights I'm never going to be allowed to see live, that I'm not going to be able to cover thoroughly. Or, you know, like tonight, I asked Golden Boy via email for a statement. Regarding James Kirkland and the WBC dropping him number one, they said ask the WBC about it. They won't even defend their. They won't comment on their own fighter to me when I'm writing a piece. He's not defending the guy, but trying to figure out what happened.
Right.
I mean, if that's the kind of boxing world you want, well, you're welcome to it. I'm going to call in Chris Pearson, and
go ahead. Anyways, fight fans, do you want to call in and tell us what your thoughts about all of this? You know, putting fighters on one mainstream line, you can certainly can. 347-205-7598. Hey, we're going to be doing a live broadcasting in July 14th in Folsom, California. That's a little past Sacramento. And we're going to be doing it live on a patio in a nightclub at 8 o'clock p.m. That's on Saturday night. And we're also going to be showing the fight, the Amir Khan and Danny Green fight. The Danny Garcia bout. So if you want to come out, I'll certainly put out the address and the number you can call for the tickets. It's gonna have a silent auction out there. Then there's gonna be fighters to meet and greet, and at the same time we're gonna be going live, so you'll be able to listen to the show live on a live broadcast there in Northern California. And it's something that we're gonna start doing once out of the month. So we're gonna be in LA. We'll be in Los Angeles next month on doing a live broadcast. So just be sure to keep a lookout for that. Me and Gabe are really excited about doing this first time ever live broadcast. I think this is the first time it's ever going to be attempted from a boxing radio show. So Leaving the Ring will be the first ones to do it. And I think we got Chris Sweet Pea Pearson with us, right?
Yes, sir.
What's up, brother? How you doing, man?
I'm pretty good, man. Just getting ready to get some sparring in.
Oh, right on, man. Who do you plan on sparring?
Some of the Olympians, the 152-pounder and the 165-pounder.
Nice, man.
Are the U.S. Olympians? You're at the training center now, yeah?
Yeah. Errol Spinks and Terrell Gashin, both are U.S. Olympians.
You're getting in with it. And Matador, Terrell was a Matador, so.
Alumni.
Yeah, I've seen him fight before. He's a good fighter, man. I think he's got a really good shot at medaling this year.
Yeah, we fought twice.
What do you think of him? What do you think of the Olympic team this year? I mean, you've had a good chance to take a look at them.
Yeah, Olympic team got a lot of talent for fighters for this game. It's just a matter of if they can know, if they get the right strategies and all that. But at the end of the day, they got some of the most talented fighters, I think, so that'll be in the game. So.
Are you going to head over for the Olympics? Are you going to go yourself to London, or are you going to be
they wanted me to go, but if I win, I have to miss my fight, and I can't do that. So.
Well, yeah, definitely can't do that. Well, let's get into that. It's been a while since we've last talked to you, and you're now, what, 3-0 with two knockouts, rather?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and when do you have your next fight scheduled? Is that on the in Cincinnati? Is that on the...
July 21st. And who are you facing? I'm not sure. Y'all don't have the name.
The dreaded TBA. Is that still that part of the game? I mean, you're making that transition. You had always had a pro style, anyways. But it seems like that part of the game for you hasn't changed. Like you're not quite sure exactly when you're going to fight, and you're never quite sure who you're going to fight, just because you're so early in your career. How do you stay in shape, and how do you stay ready for that and not go stale in the gym?
I take breaks at a time. You know, I might take a week off from training, or I might not train. I might not do as much stuff as I would do when I'm getting ready. Yeah, so, hold on 1 second.
Cut out that.
No, I had guys just talking. Yeah, but what I do is I just try to, you know, I stay in the gym, but don't overdo nothing. But when I get to wear it for the fight, I make sure I pick it up and take it to another level. But, I don't really worry about getting stale, and I just, you know, take it one day at a time and just do what I need to do to stay sharp.
Are you still going to stay at 160? Is that, are you feeling comfortable there? Or do you feel like you want to move up?
No, you know, my last two fights have been at 54 and 55, so.
You feel comfortable there. Remember, you were moving down. You actually had said to me in the gym, I think, that you could maybe think about 147, as I recall. You feel comfortable at 154, and you're going to be good there?
I feel real good at 154. I'm going to just stay there and keep sharpening up and keep training hard. And if I eventually go down some more, then we'll see. But as of right now, I'm focused at 154.
Talk to me about just heading back into you know, near your hometown, you know, or back to into your hometown, Cincinnati, Ohio. Is there any pressure when you're going to go back home? You already get started to get the phone calls and let me get tickets and all that stuff. Is there a buffer for you? Have you already kind of figured that out? Like, I'm not going to buy into all that. I just got to be a fighter.
No, I really don't. My dad and I'm kind of handle that kind of stuff. I don't really ticket. And then you got also, I got a lot of support at home, but. It's nothing crazy to work, cause I'm not headlining, so like I'm not like the main event, so I don't got to worry about as much. You know, as time go on, the body get rougher. But as of right now, you know that my people close to me, you know, constantly ask to pick the people that just from around the city. But other than that, I don't, you know, I just don't call my dad. I just worry about training. Like,
so like. Looking forward, you know, last time you were on the show, and it was actually one of my favorite segments we ever did, we started to break down the fights that were coming up, and I really liked the way you just kind of got into it and gave a strategy and your whole insight. Have you had a chance to look at the fights this weekend, Donaire, Lethubula, and what do you think about those fights?
I got a chance to watch the 2-day documentary thing after the fight, but I didn't see Donaire's fight.
No, it's coming up this weekend. It's going to be on HBO. I was just curious. I had to take a look at this guy that he's fighting.
I'm not even sure who he's fighting. I mean, I know what to expect from Donaire. You know, he's real explosive and he's real talented. So, guys at that weight, I feel like he has a speed advantage. He got good power. So, for the most part, he should be fine. Like I said, I'm not sure who he's fighting, but I would pull for Donaire.
Let me take you back into before you came on. We were discussing everything that's going on at like Showtime and with Golden Boy and Heyman, which you're an Al Heyman signed fighter, and there seems to be a nice alignment between a partnership somewhat between Al Heyman and Golden Boy. Top Rank kind of does their own thing. They're all they're their own company. They don't need other partnerships. As an Al Heyman fighter, how do you feel like you've been treated? Is it any different? is there a special treatment? Are you in contact with them very often, or is it just, you know, they let you know when you're fighting and that's just it? What was the allure for you signing with him?
Overall, they're very supportive. You know, I just had my daughter was just born. I would get, you know, text messages, phone calls, make sure everything's okay, and if I need anything. So they definitely real involved with their fighter. They're not like, you know, I'm not somebody that just works for them. You know, they treat me like family. They always try to look out for me. So you gotta appreciate that, especially in this game. You know, because it could be a dirty game. So but overall, you know, I feel like as long as I do my thing and I win my fights and I stay professional and I, you know, make the name look good and, you know, just like I said, be a professional, you know, I think our relationship will always be good. You know,
what do you think is the hardest part as a guy that a lot of us have been watching? I mean, we've been watching you for quite some time. I mean, in other words, my question is, what's the hardest part? Is the waiting is the hardest part for yourself? I mean, because obviously you want that exposure. You need to get out there. You need to be consistently in the ring. Or is it the hardest part is just keeping yourself conditioned and so that when you do get called, you're able to perform the way you should perform?
Neither one of them are difficult to me, you know, because as a fighter, that's part of your job, you know, to train and all that stuff. So that's not an issue at all. Far as, you know, wanting to be bigger and more exposure and all that stuff will come. So when I turned professional, I had a lot of following and I had a lot of support, and I still do. So, I'm fine, man. I got so much to accomplish and so many things to work on. I really can't even worry about that kind of stuff yet. You know,
Chris,
like being known and all that stuff will come.
Right, right. So when you look at the divisions, you know, from 154 to 160, what do you do the most, Chris? Do you sit there and do you analyze the guys that are in the mix and that should still be around while you're climbing up the ladder? Or do you just concentrate what you need to do in the gym and not worry about what anybody else is doing out there? How does that work with you?
I'd be lying if I said I didn't look at those guys. I definitely watch the guys who have belts at 154. And, it's not a lot of them I'm not gonna say they don't impress me, but I feel like a lot of guys are beatable. At the end of the day, I feel like talent wise and skill wise, I'm just as good as any of those guys or better. It's just a matter of getting in condition, the fact that I was 10 and 12 rounds. But to me, you know, they say it's a lot of people at the weight class, but I think it's wide open. Now, I don't see one person like you got a Floyd Mayweather at welterweight where, you know, like, you know, it's rare that he's going to lose the fight. And you got guys like at 130, 135, like Adrian Broner. You know, guys at that way, you know that nobody's beating those guys. But at 54
right.
and at 47, I feel like it's so wide open. You know, it's just, and even at 160, you know, I don't plan on fighting at 160 no time soon. But even at that weight, you know, I don't see nobody that's just, you know, that's scary. Like, oh, man, I don't know how it would be. And everybody I see, I'm like, well, right condition, I could beat these guys.
What do you think about some of the guys at 154 and 160 that are taking fights and then dropping them as soon as they get them, or they're putting out on Twitter that they want to fight this person, but and then when it's finally it looks like it's gonna come to flesh, they turn around and walk away from that. What do you think about that kind of stuff?
I'm saying about boxing. A lot of times, just guys selling whoop tickets, like guys calling guys out and screaming names because they see a guy that's on top of their game. They don't really want to fight these guys. They just trying to, you know, build their name off of theirs. So the guys that want to fight, they get to fight them. Like, for example, a guy like Andre Ward and Chad Dawson, you know, it didn't take a lot of talking. They two of the best guys that want to fight. The fight's done. You know?
Right.
If those are some of the biggest names in the sport, if they can get it done quick, I don't understand why these, you know, the smaller name guys can't fight. At the end of the day, I feel like it's a lot of guys just talking. But
I mean,
you know,
that,
like, also, like I said, I don't really get into all that. I don't worry about them. You know?
Right.
But that's what I think is going on.
Either you want to fight or you don't want to fight. You know, and it's pretty. I'm still kind of tripped out that Ward and Dawson just got it done like that. And like, all right, let's do it. I want you to come down to 168. Cool. Let's do it.
Yeah, they're two stand-up guys. And they're two competitors that want to be the best. So when you get guys like that, it's not going to be difficult. A lot of, like I said, a lot of guys want to want to talk that talk. They don't trust in their abilities enough to you know, get the fights done like that. They say what people expect them to say, but it's a different story when you get it done, like Dawson and Ward have done. So.
It was funny to me is most fighters I talk to, if you talk the fights with them, they usually talk about fighters in and around their division. Like,
right.
You know, like if you said that you bring up the guys that are around your size in Dawson, I ask you about a little guy like Donaire, you're like, well, you know, when's he fighting? Like, that is actually like across the board. Like, if you ask a heavyweight, they'll talk heavyweights. If you talk to lightweights, maybe talk junior welters and maybe some feathers that they might have to deal with. That's kind of funny. What do you think about that fight? I think Jan's got a really good chance. Like, I'm an Andre guy. I like them both, but
I think what I've seen when I watched Chad and Andre both fight, I think Chad may be more talented overall, but it's just I feel like you could take the fight from him. Like if you want to beat him, I feel like you could beat him. Like for example, with the Pascal fight, Pascal wasn't nowhere near as big as Chad or nowhere near as talented, but he like kind of took the fight to him early on and wanted to beat him, and that's what happened. A guy like Andre Ward, I don't feel like knows how to lose. So he's gonna do it. He's gonna do whatever it takes, whether it's outboxing a guy or stepping to a guy, whatever. I feel like he's gonna find a way to win. So it's hard to go against a guy like that.
That's what I'd say too. I agree, man. I'm actually really leaning towards Andre Ward on this fight. I mean, I like Chad a lot. I think he's really talented, but at the same time, I just keep going back and seeing Ward. He just keeps progressing every single time out.
Yeah.
Every time he steps in the next fight, he's progressed.
Yeah,
you know.
And the fights are supposed to be close to him. He's making them easy. He's dominating.
Exactly.
I think Chad's going to land one good one at least. We're really going to.
Charles's not a huge puncher though. You know, he's a good boxer. He can keep a guy off him, but he's not no one punch. Like, I don't think Chad punches as hard as Brock or Kessler.
That's a good observation. I mean, I wouldn't call him a one punch KO artist either, but I think he's a big man, and I mean, I think Andre's going to be very strong, but I don't know. I'm very interested in it. I think he could keep it a long distance fight or a long range fight. It could be very interesting. But Andre's that guy. He's just very fluid in terms of his approach. He'll be whatever he needs to be. Like you said, he'll find a way to win. And that's, I think mentally he's got the edge. But we'll see, man. I think it's going to be a great fight. I can't wait for that.
Yeah, I take my hats off to those guys because it's a dangerous fight for both of them. But, you know, they're trying to keep the sport alive by making the fights that most people are scared to make. And you got to applaud those guys. So. And I appreciate it because I can't wait to see it. As a fan, I can't wait to see the fight. So.
Yeah, we like to get what we like to get, you know. What do you think about, you know, I was going to ask a follow-up, Dave went on a nice tangent. But let me ask you a follow-up about the Haymon stuff. What do you think about the perception of him? It seems like there's a negative perception about, oh, it's a Haymon fighter, or, you know, that's Al Haymon. You know, he's kind of shadowy. Just I want your perspective, since you signed with him and everything, and you probably have to deal with some of that backlash. What's your take?
You know what's funny? I think it's sad that people in the sport of boxing are so used to managers and promoters doing guys dirty that when you get a guy that actually looks out for his fighters, now it's an issue. You know, he's protecting and all. What are you supposed to do as a manager? Aren't you trying to look out for your fighter and get them the most money they can get and help their, you know, career go the best way they can go? You know, I don't understand. If he was getting guys early on and just throwing them to the wolves here, they'd be talking. They'd talk bad about that. So I think that people gonna say what they need to say. He's a great guy. He take care of all his fighters. And you ask him if his fighters about him, they all gonna have good things to say. So
I think that's a valid point. Okay, I've talked with Andre Berto about it. And he's like, what am I supposed to do? Be with the guy that doesn't give me the most money? You know, I don't understand.
Right.
I think for me as a boxing consumer, if I just put that hat on, like you just did, as a fan, you want to see Ward Dawson.
Right.
A lot of times, what I've observed with his fights, and we've seen that a lot this year on Showtime. Now that the Golden Boy's kind of moved over there, and Haymon's kind of followed with them. We see a lot of mismatches, like, and those are dates that could have been good fights, like that, you know, the triple header or the Jermaine Taylor's last card. It just seems like those fights are kind of mismatchy, and that's what, you know, it's like, yeah, the Haymon fighter gets taken care of, and I love that they make great money,
But as a fight fan, I kind of want to see competitive fights. And when one guy's money is taking up most of the budget on a small show like that, like on a showbox budget, the other guy's just going to be a dead guy. I don't want to watch that. I certainly don't want to watch
that. I think at the end of the day, it kind of depends on the fighter himself, too, because I know if I get, you know, 15-20-0, and I want to fight a guy, you know, I know that Al's going, he's going to have the confidence in me to put me in there with whoever I want to be in there with. So, I mean, you can't knock a guy that will rather make, you know, a couple $100,000 fighting somebody he know he can beat than make it maybe a few more thousand and take a chance and lose. Because at the end of the day, when a guy loses, it's, oh, it's a, you know, it's a wrap, you know, unless you put together a string of wins and rebuild your name. But at the end of the day, the undefeated fighters are the guys who's looked at, you know, as the next star. So guys really are in fear of losing that. Oh, but you know, like that, having the amateur background that I've had and fighting the WSB and I always fight against tough guys, it's kind of, once I'm, I feel like I'm in shape to fight 10 and 12 rounds, I'm going to be excited to fight, you know, those big name guys. But today I'm such a competitor. I don't, you know, you tell me a guy going to outdo me in sparring today, I'm going to go in there and try to dominate just because I'm just a competitor. So it's also being smart. You want to make as much money as possible and take as little risk as possible. But at the end of the day, it's still a sport. And guys like Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods, all those great superstar athletes, got their name because they was willing to compete against the best and outshine against the best. So it just depends on the type of person that the type of fighter the guy is, you know. So
that's true. Paul Williams fought like everybody. He never said
that. Yeah, you know. So you know, he's not even, to be honest, to me, as far as skill wise and talent wise, he wasn't really that talented. But his heart and his desire got him over a lot of times. So if you get a guy that got talent and that wants to fight and wants to be the best, that's when you get these special guys, you know. So we'll see. I mean, I just take it one day at a time. A lot of times, you don't know what's going on behind closed doors. And me being a fighter, I know that's a lot of stuff that goes on
yeah.
for making these type of fights. So, you know,
that's true.
It's stuff with money, stuff with location and all. It's not as easy as to make those big fights people think. So,
no,
I understand
any
why
fight.
Sometimes you got to just, you know, you just got to just take who's going to fight you and, you know, just take it from there.
That's the truth. That is the truth. Most people don't know, like, how many factors, you know, actually go down to actually just make any fight, not even just a top.
Yeah, and the thing is, sometimes, I'm not going to say it bothers me, but the thing I notice a lot with fans is, I'm like, well, just fight, just get it done. This is, as a fan looking in, I understand y'all want to see all this,
right.
But you got to remember, these are guys' livelihood. This is all certain guys got. So, you know, it's not like we want to perform and you know, give the fans they want to see, but at the end of the day, we still got to make sure that we take care of ourselves at home. Because if we go out, if a guy go out and get his head knocked off and you know, you was entertained, but now what? Now, what did he do after that? You know, he still got a family to provide for. So I understand what goes into. I understand why some guys are hesitant. But just like I said, as I get bigger, as far as making more money, fighting bigger names and fighting tougher fights, I'm just the type of guy that I'm going to want to fight those type of guys just because how I am. Because even in the amateurs, you know, when I was going to national tournaments and they'd be talking about a certain guy, like, oh, well, I don't know if you're going to beat him. I stared after that kind of stuff. Like, oh, all right, well, we'll see. You know, so I think it's a different type of person, man.
A great example of that was Bradley, you know. Bradley, like, he took a lot of shit for not fighting Khan.
But
he made the smarter move. He ultimately doubled his money. I remember it was kind of funny, you know, watching Khan kind of, he was talking about it, and he really made a good move, and, you know, he probably made more money. It's like, not probably, dude. He made, like, you know, quadruple, I think, what he was being offered. And if he gets a rematch with Pacquiao, which Pacquiao wants that clause exercised at some point, he's going to make even more, like double that, you know. So, yeah, I agree, you know. I think there is a period of you got to earn it. And you know, with Heyman fighters, the only thing I worry about with them is sometimes, like Danny Jacobs, I think, was like this. It was a lot of soft touches, and then all of a sudden, boom, Dmitry Pirog. And that's happened. Berto was the same way. A lot of soft touches, bang, Louis Colazzo, and then a lot of soft touches, and then boom, he gets beat by Ortiz. Sometimes his matchmaking isn't the greatest, but you know, hey, that's just this game. And like you said, it's up to the fighter to overcome that. So,
but
well, man, you know, unfortunately, we don't know who you're fighting, so we can't really delve into the actual factuals of your fight. But I look forward to seeing it. Hopefully they'll stream it or put it up on Showtime Extreme, and we'll get a chance to look at you.
Oh, no, you know, that's an HBO card.
This is HBO card. So, does HBO do those extreme or the extra undercard things? I don't think they always do.
No, I don't understand. I mean, most of them I stream it. If not, you know, hopefully it'll be on YouTube or something.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody will catch it. The camera phone action.
Either way, his publicist, Radio Raheem, is really good at, you know, sending it, you know, the fight after, you know, if we don't catch it. So, either way, we'll end up seeing it, you know.
That is true. Radio is the man.
He is.
All right, man. Pretty good, huh? We'll catch up with you, and I wish you all the luck. And say what's up to Terrell and those guys, and make sure to keep your guard up, man. I'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate it, man.
All right, brother. Man. Take care. Yeah, I really like Sweet Pea, man. Chris Pearson. He's a kid that we've been watching for quite some time when the Matadors, even before that, he's amateur. Now he's pro. And I like, you know what I like about him the most is that here's a kid that is entertaining, he's exciting, but he has the honesty of you know, who he is. You know, he's like, hey, look, this is how other fighters are thinking, because I'm a fighter, and I know this is what they're thinking. Even though in the progression-wise of making that amount of money, he's not there yet, but he's kind of like giving them that backup leeway of saying, here's the explanation of what a fighter goes through and what they see. And this is why sometimes fights just don't happen. You know, it comes down to, yes, we're paid to entertain you, but if we're not getting paid enough to pay off our bills, you got entertained, but what about us? Now we're back into struggling to pay the water bill, the gas bill, the phone bill. But you got entertained. You got your money's worth. And fighters need to get their money's worth, too. So I understand that, and I like that answer. You know, he does show he's a very intelligent kid. He's very focused, and he's very well aware of what's around him. And I can't wait to see Chris, man, a lot more of Chris in that ring. Really can't see. I can't wait to see where his career takes him. You know, like I said, this is an exciting fighter.
Yeah, that's also the thing. He likes to go to war a bit, you know, a bit too much sometimes. You know, longevity in this period, you know, it's going to be important for him to learn how to just calm down, box, and use his natural gifts. And he can save the going to war for when everybody's watching on cable, you know. But I expect him to do good things and to be that kind of guy that just wants to prove himself. He was like that since the first time I saw him. You know, he just went in there, and he's in with a top guy, you know, a world-class amateur fighter that was turning pro like himself, you know, on the Matadors. And he just always acted like he belonged and always wanted to get after it. So right off the bat, I mean, he was a crowd favorite. And I think that's why, you know, it's part of the Heyman group, the Watson brothers, they would always hang out at those fights. And I always found very savvy about them was, you know, I didn't see other fight people at the World Series of Boxing. But those guys were there from, I think, the second, maybe even the first fights. They were there, and they've remained there, and they ended up signing Chris Pearson out of it. They have an eye for talent. I'll give them that.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, I mean, it's like Samson. They have an eye for talent. You know, they know what to look for and who to sign and how to invest their money and time in particular fighters. You know, fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring, 3 hours of boxing talk. Talk to myself, Dave Duenas, or Gable Montoya. We don't have our producer, David Chin, with us. He's on vacation, a much-needed vacation that David Chin has been wanting and needing to take. So we don't have him. So what I'm going to do is I'll patch you in, say the area code, and just tell me your name and what you want to talk about here on Leaving in the Ring. Again, be sure to check out the Boxing Fix every Sunday night at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern, and Noche de Boxeo, Monday night, 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern time. So let's patch in some fight fans here, Gabe.
Yep, sounds good to me.
Let's get we got a lot of numbers here. Let's go with area code 860, area code 860. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's CT.
CT, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, man. Hey, happy 4th of July.
Yeah, you too. before I wanted to say what I was going to talk about, can I just mention a certain fighter that I haven't heard from in a while? Just wondering, because I really like watching him fight. You guys ever heard what happened to Ricardo Torres?
Ricardo Torres. Oh. You know what? Yeah, talk about a fun guy to watch, huh? I don't know. I don't know what happened. Gabriel, have you heard anything about Ricardo?
I have no idea. No, it's actually, somebody asked me that on Twitter a while back, and I started to ask around, and no one seemed to know. So I'll keep looking into it, man. That's a good question. Thank you for stumping us.
I'll hit up our guy that deals with all the Latin American fighters. He probably, Joe will probably know. I'll find out by Joe. I'll even text him right now and ask him if he knows any word on Ricardo Torres. But yeah, good one, brother. We'll have to find out.
All right. Thinking about this Alvarez type thing. To me, it seems almost like a circus act now. I mean, we're talking about Ricardo Mayorga and Gabe. I think you said Asmino Freitas.
They're partying like 1999, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. But to me, from what I saw, Laura, I had to kind of step back a little bit. I mean, I understand style makes fights, but I would have to question it a little bit. I mean, I always think Laura's a good fighter, but I don't know. I want to see how he would do against Alvarez, but I always think, to me, I think Molina deserves a shot more than anybody at the moment. Just because of what he's been going through lately. You know, he's had his run, and I think he'll show Alvarez a lot of different looks in the ring. So that's why I want to see Molina fight Alvarez. He's very tricky, and I think Alvarez will have to try to adapt to whatever he does as well. As far as I want to talk about the triple header on Showtime, I was very impressed with Gary Russell. I mean, I think this guy's he has very, very fast hands. I think
very
Gamboa
fast
had,
hands, yeah.
I thought Gamboa had fast hands, but this guy has Gamboa, I think, by maybe a little bit. I heard he said he wants to fight Lopez next. I don't understand why, but I mean, I understand why, but not really. You know, I want to see him step up against maybe somebody like I heard the Mikey Garcia and Asolino, I mean, I'm sorry, the Celestino Caballero fight didn't go through or something like that. Maybe get him in there with Mikey Garcia if he could. I know you guys were saying like before, like you don't know if he's maybe ready for Garcia yet, but I just want to see how he would do against Garcia.
I think why he would want to fight a Lopez first is Lopez is on the downs,
yeah,
and you want to prove yourself against the next champion. I mean, I don't think he's in like journeyman or what people would call the journeyman or faded fighter territory, but Juanma's got some issues, and he's got some miles on him. Mikey Garcia, I don't think they would want to make that fight right now. You want to make that fight when it means something.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they both have titles and it's unification.
When it's
and
cooked.
All the marbles.
When it's cooked and ready, that's when you want to make that fight, I think. You know, when it's cooked and ready to be served up, that's the logical.
I think Lopez is a huge step up for him too, though. I mean, I'm curious to ask him about it tonight, like what he wants to do next. A guy like him, though, you know, he just has full belief in himself.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anybody that he wouldn't want to face. You know, if it's up to him, I think he would do it. You know, but I think Mikey Garcia is a guy that's headed for a little bit of stardom. I don't think he's going to ever be like a crossover type guy, but I think he's going to be a champion, and he's going to be worth some drawing power, some money, and some ratings at some point. And that's the kind of fight you just want to take your time with. You know, you don't want to rush it. But Juanma, you know, maybe I wonder how Juanma would feel about that. But also, you got to remember, he's a Heyman fighter, primarily working with Golden Boy, and Garcia and Lopez are both top ranked people. So unless those things change, we're never going to see those fights.
So I honestly think that I think Gary Russell would beat Lopez. I think Lopez will show him, you know, some different looks and show him that powerful right hook. But I think as far as hand speed will go, I think he'll have an amazing I'm sorry for the word. he'll have a better, you know, hand speed and stuff like that. He'll overwhelm Lopez with his hand speed, and I don't think Lopez will see the punches coming, and I think he'll still have the effects over the Salido fight in his mind once he's getting hit.
this is the thing that honestly would like, the reason I would like to see the fight is that, for one, Lopez, I said this a while back, even before when he got in with Salido, I said Lopez is in dire of a leave of absence. He needs to, you know, take a step back, recoup his body. He's been in too many wars. I think this year layoff suspension, right, I think it's going to do a lot of good for his body. Yeah, is he going to come back in with the mind frame of being stopped again for the second time against his conqueror? Of course, that's always going to linger in the back of his mind and stuff. But I think having the chance to get your body back together, get your focus where it needs to be, because let's be honest, Lopez – focus really fell off the chart when he started self-believing into that power, thinking that power was going to get him out of every single situation, you know. And when you have the crowd or your countrymen behind you, some fighters start believing that they're the ones that are going to pull you through a fight. They're the ones that are going to win the fight for you. And Lopez needed to be brought back down to earth a little, and he did. Salido did it twice in a row. Facing a Gary Russell, he's got hand speed, he's got youth, and he's got hunger. It definitely spells for a lot of trouble for Lopez. But this is my curiosity, is that Russell does get hit. And I'm wondering, how does he react to a world-class puncher? Not a world-class beater, a puncher. A guy that when he does land, he does buckle you and he does hurt you. That's going to be the telling. And I commend him for saying, I want to fight Lopez. Even though he is on the declining of being a champion, his career has gone the other way because of all the wars he's been in. Still, I think he has enough to test the kid Russell enough to find out where he really, what's his stance as in moving up the ladder of the Escalon of fighters. So I think it's a great matchup if it was to be made. But I agree with my partner. You got one Al Haymon fighter versus a top-ranked fighter. And let's be honest, these guys do not like to share the sandbox in the playground.
Yeah. I'd like to say one more thing about Corey Spinks. Very much, you know, enjoyed watching him as a fighter. I really think he should retire now. I think he's one of the best defensive fighters I've ever seen. I mean, his reflexes used to be so nice, and the way he used to slip punches. I also, when he fought Jermaine Taylor that night, I was going for Corey Spinks, and, you know, I've seen him, you know, decline more and more each time I see him fight. I really think he needs to, you know, think about something else.
I agree.
You know, the other thing, too, is I didn't realize I had muted myself. Regarding Gary Russell, I agree with you. I think Spinks, he just looks all done in, man. He's not reacting to punches very well.
No, he wasn't.
That's usually not a good sign. I think he can probably get back in shape, but he may have stunted his growth or shortened his career with a little bit of lifestyle stuff going. And now getting serious at this age, like, it's just not going to happen. And he never really had much power to begin with, and it's a rough division. He's just going to get roughed up in it. But you know, going back to your thing about Garcia and Russell. We don't really know all that much about Gary. You know, we know he's incredibly fast. I've seen him in person. It's ridiculous. You know, I was actually talking to somebody before the show about it, and they'd seen him in Cincinnati, and I'd seen him in L.A. And you can hear his punches, like, whiffing through the air. That's how fast he is. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, wow.
But and they're so straight. You know, like, Gamboa is a little more, he wings it. Gary, his punches are very elongated. They're right down the pipe. He admires Sugar Ray Robinson. You can see it in his, you know, the way he fights. It's kind of almost like Sugar Shane Mosley was when he was young. Very upright, very classic boxer puncher stance. But, you know, he's had some distance fights. Actually, Linus on Twitter was like, nobody forgot some of his stinky solo box AO performances. And it's true. He's been extended, although you can't hold that against a guy, because sometimes he gets extended and then he figures some things out and he learns. And then, boom, he gets an explosive performance, which we just saw against Christopher Perez, which was just ridiculous. That's what you want. That's for us, to showcase a guy. And so everybody walks away going, God, I want to see him again. But let's flip the script and you look at Mikey Garcia. Look at the way he's been developed by the expert matchmakers, you know, Brad Goodman and Bruce Trampler. You know, they took him through Cornelius Locke, you know, in 2010 in August. That's a tough fight. He takes him out late in the fight, so we now know he has, you know, 11th round power. It comes around with Olivier Lonke, takes him out in five rounds as a solid fighter. And so then they've gone with the veterans,
that should have extended him and did, and he learned from both of those. They put him in with Matt Remillard, an undefeated fighter, and he takes him out in 10 rounds. You know, and there's a nice progression there. The next two guys are, you know, Rafael Guzman is 28-2 when they fought, and he takes him out in 4 rounds. He's fought more seasoned guys. And to take out Bernabe Concepcion the way he did, very professional, you know, he gets that title, the NABF title, and then the WBO featherweight title, the NABO. There's a definite progression in what he's doing. It really does show the age of Top Rank versus the age of Golden Boy and Heyman, that, yeah, you can take over and you can kind of sign all the best guys and throw money at them and treat them well, but true boxing knowledge and how to develop a fighter is very it's an art that takes a very long time to learn, and they haven't gotten there yet. Gary hopefully will be able to overcome the inexperience of the people developing him, because I think he is a special fighter. I really do.
Yeah.
I agree.
So,
all right, brother, thanks for calling me, man. I'm going to put you back on hold.
All right, thanks a lot.
Fight fans, you want to call in? You sure can, 347-215-7598 here on Leaving in the Ring. We got a couple of interviews that are going to come up, but we definitely want to talk about the past week in fights here on Leaving the Ring. Happy 4th of July to everybody out there. Hopefully you guys had a great time if with family members and you enjoyed yourself. And if you, like myself, had to get up early in the morning, go to work and stuff, it sucked. But we have to do what we got to do. When we talk about paying bills, man, we have to pay our bills. So hopefully you got walking in, you're getting ready, you're sitting down, you're relaxing, cracked open a brewski, getting ready. So we're going to listen, and then sit down and say, I'm going to listen to Leaving the Ring, 3 hours of boxing talk. So if you want to call in again, 347-215-7598, let's patch in another fight fan, Gabe, see what they have on their mind.
Yep, we're about 4 minutes away from me calling in Russ Amber. So, yeah, let's do it.
Let's patch in. Remember, again, I got to say your area code because we do not have Mr. David Chen with us. Area code 951. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? Okay, well, we'll go away from that one. Let's go with the area code. I have no idea. 806. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? Area code 806.
Yeah, how you doing?
Doing good, man. Yeah.
Yes, I want to ask you guys about, you know, how the Olympics are coming up. Who do you guys see as the best representative that the United States has going for the gold in London?
You know what? That's a good question. There's a lot of good kids that are entering the boxing Olympians this 2012. What's a good one?
I would say the guy we were talking about earlier, Terrell Gaucha, he's out of Cincy. He's as good a shot as any at the middleweight division. He's had a little look at the international competition from his time with the Matadors, just traveling with the team. So he's had an opportunity to scout. And he's a tremendous talent. A lot of guys talk about him in the gym. He's a good puncher. He likes to get down. He's got more of a professional style. I've watched him fight, made his debut here in L.A. with the Matadors. Really solid fighter. Another former Matador who's going for – this is his third Olympics.
Third time.
Rushy Warren. And he's got a good shot at it. I believe that this could be his last Olympics, so – hopefully third time's a charm for him. He's got as good a shot as any. He's got a very studied amateur style. But all that kind of semi-pro experience, fighting without the headgear, that took a lot of those guys' game to another level. It's a completely different game, the amateurs. But these guys now understand risk. They understand how to take a little more damage than maybe their counterparts do. And so they'll be a little more, I think, mature, particularly Warren. There'll be an actual man in there. A lot of the international competition you're facing, a lot of times they're a little bit older because, you know, some of them don't turn pro because it's more of almost a pro system, their amateur system. So they just stay amateurs. And that's what I saw a lot of times when visiting teams would come in and fight the Matadors. You'd see, like, just man against boys because the Matadors this year were particularly young. You got Joseph Diaz, Jose Ramirez, both those kids are excellent. Joseph's got an excellent chance at gold. I think Jose does too. But we've got a really strong team this year. I think they might be a little young in some respects. Rashid's a good leader. He's an older guy. Terrell's certainly a mature individual. The other guys skew a little young. That's the only thing I worry about with them. But I think this year is going to be very competitive. It's going to be a fun year to watch the Olympics, particularly for boxing fans.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I said it's really, really tough. In my opinion, really tough to kind of single out who's going to take gold. A lot of these kids that have entered and is going to be representing the U.S., they all have a great shot at doing it. A real good team this year for the U.S. Hey, man, thanks for calling in. I'm going to put you back on hold.
Thanks.
You want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. Call here on Leaving the Ring. Chop it up with us and talk some boxing. 3 hours of boxing talk. Hey, again, really quick, just to throw out there, we are going to be doing our first live broadcasting. It's a charity youth boxing fundraiser. Tickets will be $25 each or $30 at the door, which will include two premium cigars, scotch, and rum tasting. They're going to have live music. There's going to be a number of top professional fighters out there so for a meet and greet. Some of the names, Kareem Mayfield, Brandon Gonzalez, and among others, they're going to be in attendance. I believe they're trying to get Andre Ward to be out there as well. And you can get an autograph, picture taken, whatever you want. They're going to have a silent auction for items, including a personal sparring session. And they're going to raffle off some T-shirts, posters, and hats. Also, in attendance is going to be ourselves, Leaving the Ring. Myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya. We're going to be doing a live broadcast feed out there, talking some boxing, interviewing the fighters, and chopping it up with the fans of the sport. So be sure to come out and check it out. Have a drink with us. Hang out. To get the tickets, you can call 916-947-6065. Ask for Rob or 916-672-1867. Ask for Martin. So come out and check it out. It starts at 8 o'clock until the cops come knocking and saying, shut the party down. You know, this is a 21 and over event. So July 14th, and they are going to be throwing up the fight on HBO, the Amir Khan versus Danny Garcia fight, overhead of us while we're live broadcasting. So you're not going to miss the fights. So you're going to be able to come out, enjoy the fights, listen to the radio show, and have some drinks and hang out and then BS with us right after we get off the air. We're going to be doing this, like I said, once out of the month, doing a live broadcast. Next month, we'll let everybody know where we're going to be at, and it's going to be in Los Angeles, and then we'll continue doing that. So hopefully we get to meet some of the listeners and mostly meet the fans of the sport that we love, boxing.
He's going to call in a minute, Dave. He's going to call from a landline. So I was hitting him on his cell, but he wanted a better connection, which I appreciate. I'm thinking, you know, Russ, you'll see, we can talk to him for a long time. I was thinking maybe we'll invite him in to help us interview Gary Russell if you're down for that. That could be kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
But hang on a second, let me grab him.
Go right ahead, you know. Again, come out and check us out. July 14th, first time ever we're doing something like this. Should be a lot of fun, man, a lot of fun. And like I said, get to meet some fighters, chop it up with us. And it's for a good cause, boxing charity, you know, something that we all should put some money in to keep our sport alive. And Gabriel Montoya is back with our next guest. Go ahead, Gabe.
I'm here with a veteran trainer of, you're going to have to tell us all the fighters he has worked with, Mr. Russ Amber. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Gabe. I really appreciate it. I'm really glad to be on. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, he's also the owner of many victories over me in a game of pool. He absolutely decimated me when he came to L.A. I got to get him back for that.
Sorry, you'll get a rematch. Don't worry.
One of the reasons I wanted to call you in is just because we were talking the other night, and you gave me your whole take on how you saw Bradley Pacquiao, which stirred up all this controversy about judging and you know, corruption or supposed corruption in the sport. And your story about how you watched the fight just kind of blew me away, and I was hoping that you would share it with everybody on the air.
Well, I'd love to. I hope we have time. I think it's probably something that needs to be scene set somewhat. So, providing we have the time, I'd love to do it. Are we okay on time?
We're okay with time.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, perfect. As I explained to you, I was in Canastota that weekend for the Boxing Hall of Fame inductions, which, on a side note, was just fantastic. It was great to be there. And after the banquet dinner was over, which was in Syracuse, where there was like upwards of 2,500 people in attendance, a bunch of us hightailed it back to Canastota, where a restaurant bar and grill was showing the fight. And I'd have to say that in the whole place, there was probably about, rough estimate, about 500-600 people in there, all settled in to watch the Pacquiao fight. We got there, you know, like virtually minutes before the fighters entered the ring, so had to grab a seat wherever we could. And, you know, we were fortunate enough to sit beside some people who I never met before, just boxing fight fans who were there to watch the fight, and we took our seat. And, you know, one guy next to me says, yeah, he says, I bet a lot of money on Bradley. Bradley's a live dog. And I said, yeah, I thought he was a live dog as well, and, you know, it's going to be a good fight. And so we settled in to watch the fight. One of the beauties we had, and I only realized the beauty of this afterwards, was that we were watching on the top rank feed. I don't know how come that happened, but the feed that was coming into the place was the top rank feed. It wasn't the HBO feed, which was somewhat refreshing a little bit, because the commentary was virtually nil, if any, and we didn't have any scorecard coming up, so everyone was just watching the action that was happening. The visuals were good,
right.
Sound was good, and it was wonderful. So we're watching this. After two rounds, we're looking at each other. Virtually everyone in our vicinity, as we were comparing our notes, virtually everybody had Bradley up 2-0 after two rounds. Both everybody around us gave Bradley the first two rounds. Okay, fight goes on, you know, Pacquiao's starting to come on, and it looks like really he might be taking Bradley out of the fight. And, you know, Bradley started to look exhausted. His body language wasn't great in the corner. It looked like Pacquiao was pulling away. I then scored the seventh round for Bradley, as did the gentleman and the people sitting around me. And we gave the last three rounds to Bradley as well. As soon as the fight was over, I had it 6-6 as soon as it ended. And that was just my instinctive reaction, scoring it, watching it right there. There's no doubt about it that the rounds that that Pacquiao won, he won them convincingly. And, you know, he maybe even staggered. You know, he hurt Bradley on a couple of occasions. But having said that, it's still a 10-9 round. So he won I scored it immediately. The guy beside me who bet on Bradley, he scored it 7-5 Pacquiao. Which is fair, you know, no problem.
Right.
Either way, everybody was in hushed anticipation when the scoring was about to be announced. And there was rumblings and saying, oh, this is going to be close. And I said, hey, don't be surprised. This could go either way. This could be a draw. They could give this to Bradley. There's all kinds of rumblings going on, but everybody is dead silent. I never, and I'm 33 years in the business, Gabe, going on 34 come September, I never sensed for a second that anybody in the room felt that this was a one-sided wash, and, you know, that the announcement of the scorecards was going to be a mere formality. Everybody was just in anticipation of what was to come. And when the score was announced, nobody threw their beer bottle at the screen. Nobody started booing. Nobody started cursing and swearing. You know, a close fight. Some people say, oh, I thought Pacquiao won it. Oh, it was a good fight. There was not a sense of this robbery that everyone was talking about. So we get back in the car. We're driving back to Syracuse, to where our hotel was. My cell is going nuts with text messages. People are calling me. Did you see the robbery? What a ridiculous. And I turn to my friend, who's a journalist, an avid boxing journalist. He comes from a journalist family. His father was the voice of the Montreal Expos on television here. This guy's a sports nut. I turned to him and I said, were we at the same fight? Like, this is nuts. By the time we got back to the hotel, everything had just broken wide open that we had been witness to the biggest scandal since the Red Sox, since the Black Sox scandal, you know? And I'm saying, this is crazy. And I'm only going on my gut instinct. Now I'm starting to doubt what I saw, and I hate doing that. But I hate that, you know? And
yeah,
but I trusted my instinct, and I still to this day do. And I think as time has passed, people have realized that when you're scoring a fight, you know, it's all well and good at the end of the fight to say this guy won and, you know, who did more damage, and that's true. But unfortunately, a fight isn't scored that way, and it's scored by rounds, and, you know, providing there's not a knockdown in the fight, generally, you know, it's 10-9 or one round to each guy. And at the end of it, I came up with 6-6, and I wouldn't have been shocked if it had gone 7-5 in favor of Pacquiao. I wouldn't have screamed robbery, and I'm not sure that I could have scored it 7-5 in favor of Bradley. I mean, I'm just telling you what I came up with. So that's the way I saw it, and I think now that time has passed and people have gotten to see the fight and have realized that just what a farce the call of HBO was in the fight. I just found the call horrific, and now I realized afterwards why people were doing this. It was like you were totally watching something else that you were seeing with your eyes, but your ears were hearing something else, and that bothered me a lot.
Let me ask you this, Russ. When you hear the commentary after, and you hear what the reaction of people, how they were acting because of what HBO commentators were saying, what does that? Do you think that's the major problem sometimes in our sport, is the influence of maybe three guys that have an agenda, which is to cover an event that's solely for the one person, not the event itself, not the actual match, but just make sure that they have their pom-poms just for one guy?
There's no doubt about in my mind that I think that's a problem. And sometimes I wonder, like I often question myself. I've been working in the media as well since 1988. I called Roy Jones' fight against Park Si-hun in Korea. I called that fight. This is going to be my sixth Olympic Games as a broadcaster for the national network. I've worked for the Canadian ESPN, and I, trust me, I know what it's like to be on the media end of things and not just in the boxing on the competitive side, but I'm in awe sometimes, amazed, I'm shell-shocked when I listen to a commentary that could either be A, as biased as this was in towards Pacquiao, and unless Bradley did a handstand and hit Pacquiao with his stool, they weren't going to give him credit for anything that he did.
Right.
As much as I am when they totally crap all over an event or a fighter that they're airing, and they're airing a fight and then telling you all the reasons why you shouldn't be watching it, you know, like it's mind-blowing, like it just
right.
Doesn't make any sense, and you know, I think that sometimes their agenda is definitely tarnished, and especially with the CompuBox, and I've said this before, you know, they give this great name of CompuBox. It's
right.
It's not what CompuBox. It's two guys at the ring counting punches. What CompuBox? You know, like they try to give this justification, and it's only there to justify the commentary that they're making, you know, just to back up what they're making. And if anybody should know, you cannot judge a fight on total compilation. Give us the round-by-round punching, I can live with that. But don't give me your full fight summary that at the end of the fight, some guy outlanded somebody 500-1 because the compilation of each round is not indicative of how many rounds are won.
Exactly. No, I completely agree with that. You know, I'm just.
It was interesting. Somebody mentioned one of our more intelligent listeners. I've actually sat down with, and he's really super boxing guy, Linus, and he said, well, the only problem with the way you saw the fight was that all of Press Row pretty much had Pacquiao winning as well. But as a guy that was there, anytime Manny like moved, fainted, threw a punch, they went crazy. And that's something you can't really see on HBO. You know, as a broadcaster, they turn down the noise. It's kind of selective when they'll let that crowd noise through. And they went nuts for everything that Pacquiao did. As a guy sitting there, I had the worst seat in the house, but on press row. But, you know, I had it very lopsided, like 10-2. But then when I watched it on TV, I'm like, you know what? Like, this fight was a lot closer than I realized. Still had Pacquiao winning, but it was a much closer fight.
That's fine, but that's okay. It can be close. But where I started to go off, Gabe, and that's when I started to let my feelings be known on Twitter, and I got numerous interviews as a result of this, is when the guy came up and said, the guys in press row all had Pacquiao winning. Oh, you mean all these same guys who had Marquez winning in the previous Pacquiao fight?
Right.
All those
right.
same guys, all the journalists, I think out of 36, 13 had it a draw, the rest had Marquez winning the fight. The same guys. How come nobody came to Marquez's defense? It was a close fight. You know, it was close. I'm not going to say it was an outright robbery, but I thought, in my opinion, Marquez won that fight cleanly. I thought Marquez won that fight cleaner than Pacquiao won this one.
I would agree with that.
But nobody came to his defense.
Nope. And I actually said that, and it kind of made some Filipino reporters mad.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing.
I was like, where was your outrage when Marquez got robbed?
But I'm more concerned with the outrage. You know, it's under. I respect the Filipino people and the Filipino press for standing by their guy. Their guy could have got knocked out. As far as they're concerned, it's an illegal blow. That's fine. I have no problem with that. You know, like no, but you understand. I don't mind the passion of the fans.
Right.
That doesn't bother me. I mind the passion of the broadcaster who comes to the defense and obliterates boxing and tells us how corrupt boxing is and comes to the and says that this we've just witnessed a robbery when such is not the case, and yet they don't do that for Richard Abril. They didn't do that for Gabriel Campillo. They didn't do that for various other fighters who have been subject to way worse decisions than this, you know, including Marquez. That bothers me more. That the Filipino press or the fans of Pacquiao supporting their guy, I respect that. I have no problem for it. But as a broadcaster and journalist and as a judge, you have to be far more objective than that.
Absolutely, I agree. I think that it has to have a higher standard, you know, in terms of what you're going to say, because there's millions of people that are tuning in. Your responsibility is to be fair and to call things the way they should be done. If you're going to rant about one issue, don't rant about the issue just because this guy has a sole power of stardom throughout the whole world. It should be equally, you know, divided among every fighter that has a bad night for them or an unjustified night for them. I agree with you.
No doubt about it. I absolutely agree. And I thought that was shoddy. You know, I thought especially in the broadcast at the end of the fight, Kellerman gets in the ring and says, somebody I respect very much at ringside, and he didn't name who, said he had you winning the fight to Bradley. Well, by saying that, you've just said you respect this guy very much.
Right.
You know, you say he's at ringside, he gave you the fight, and in the same breath, your network is crapping all over the decision, which in turn craps all over boxing, which you're asking people to shell out pay-per-view money to watch. To me, it's just a disservice to the sport. It just doesn't make sense of why you would do that. It's like you know, you get someone's money, and then once you get his money, you tell him what a crap meal he's going to get at the restaurant. You know, what are you doing? Are you kidding?
Absolutely,
yeah, though. It's a very biased, it's kind of biased reporting. It's like, look at this thing this way. Look at this thing the way I want you to see it.
That's exactly right. And if you don't see it our way, you're wrong. It's corrupt. It's wrong because you didn't see it the way we called it. Why? Is someone else not entitled to an opinion?
It's we're judging an art, after all, you know?
Yeah, it is.
If you don't like it, it's like, it reminds me of a friend of mine who we have opposite tastes in music. And I'll be driving with the guy, and, you know, the rule is the guy whose car it is gets to play the music. And if I don't like something, I'm kind of vocal about it. And rather than change it, he'll turn it up louder and say, no, you're just not hearing it right. But, no, I just don't like it. You know, and I think that's the case here. We all kind of see it one way and or our own way, and yet the network, all those little things, the this is where the guy got hit. There's a graph that I still can't figure out where they show the whole body and, you know, most of the punches landed to the left side. And that's all the things that the casual fan thinks are actual scores. Like, well, see, look, he landed more punches, so he must have won, which completely erases, you know, the other three aspects of how you judge a fight. I think they've dumbed down how people see fights as opposed to educate with all their tools.
You're absolutely right, and they also are trying. They've, in my opinion, they've turned into snake oil salesmen because they've tried to make this look so high tech by putting these robot type graphics up, you know, that have pinpoint accuracy of where the punches landed, when it's nothing more than two guys, man, three, four guys sitting at the ring counting and writing something down. It could be anybody. You could get the janitor to do that. You know, it has no sophistication whatsoever, and yet they're trying to give it sophistication to justify their call of the fight. And that bothers me a lot, Gabe. You know what? You're 100% right about that. I think the thing that has exposed them even more, and I spoke to you about this last night, the video that's been circulating on YouTube where the gentleman who put it together, and that's one of the better things that I've seen in boxing, where a fan has been able to take the call of the fight, actually hear them say, "Wow, this landed," and then he shows it again, and it's not anywhere close to landing.
Right.
I think that discredited the call of the fight even more, and made people realize, hey, you know what, might be right. And I know for a fact that there are media people who not necessarily boxing fans, but morning hosts on talk radio or whatever, who didn't see the fight, but
right.
go by the general consensus of respectable people who said, oh, it was a robbery, because if HBO's saying it's a robbery, that certainly has. So they're turning around and saying, another black guy for the sport of boxing, now we know why everyone's going to MMA. Crap. And it's asinine, to make decisions. They didn't even see it, but they're going on the general consensus. I really don't think that the responsibility was fulfilled by HBO as a broadcaster of a fight. It's not professional at all.
No, it's not. To me, when I tune in, it's like I'm listening to two guys that there's a more of a personal agenda rather than just doing their job, which is cover it, tell us exactly what's going on, not what it was based on what you feel. I mean, because there's times and even with the Pacquiao and before that with fights where I've seen him go, oh, he landed this punch, and the punch was never even thrown.
Yeah.
And I sit back and I go, and I when I saw that YouTube videotape, which I know the kid that made it, I basically said I really didn't need to see that tape to know that how these guys commentate, but I'm glad that you took the time to do it, because there's a lot of people that don't really, especially the casual fans, that don't really watch the sport, and they end up missing all the stuff that really wasn't even happening there at that moment. They're just going off of two voices or three voices that are commentating and putting up a fog that is so thick. And in reality, there is no fog. It's a mirage. It's a trick. That's all it is.
It is. It is. And their burden of proof is CompuBox, the great system, the educated, sophisticated system we have, proves that we're right.
Right.
Not to.
Yeah. Yeah, I've also noticed this on Press Row. I've mentioned this on the show before, that they'll sometimes, and I don't know who it is that writes this thing, they'll give you the printout for each round or each fight. They'll give you, here's the scorecards, and they'll copy them. But then
right.
they'll also give you, flash quotes, but then you get CompuBox numbers, and it's a form, put out by CompuBox, and same thing that everybody sees, but it's just written down. But sometimes they'll add, a little extra stat, in handwriting. And Pavlik Taylor, too, is one example, where they said, well, Pavlik averaged X amount of jabs during the fight. But they didn't really say, how many jabs he landed per round. He just averaged as much. And I could throw 30 jabs over the course of a fight every round, but if I miss, 29 of them, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I don't put that stat in there. But I noticed that a lot of the guys, Dan Raphael was one. I think Kevin Ioli was another one that picked it up. Definitely Dan Raphael picked it up, but specifically. And they put that in their little stat in there. And I'm like, why would you put that little extra thing? And it was, I remember running into Jim Lampley afterwards and asked him how he had the fight. I think he had an 8-4 for Pavlik. I had it much closer. In fact, it almost felt like Taylor kind of not won the boxing match, but won the fight seeing it live. And he just went crazy, and he cited immediately he averaged X amount of jabs. And it is, they kind of went back to that CompuBox thing. And I think they've used it. It's become more than just kind of it's a tool. But it's only
right.
as good as, it only has as much credence as you give it. They seem to treat it now like the Bible as a way of backing up what you saw. I don't agree.
That's why, Gabe, and I'm sorry, sir, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
I'm sorry, this is my co-host here, David Duenas.
David, I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no problem.
I think one of the things that's a mistake right now, and boxing can be so subjective, you have to be able to understand the art of the sport in order to appreciate its effectiveness. It's not
right.
simply a case. It's not, the Olympic boxing scenario of, human fencing where you just touch and that's all that counts. Nothing else matters. So there are people whose different tastes influence how a round is scored, especially when it's a close round. When I was watching the Marquez fight and when I was watching, and I'll just use those as examples because they're the most recent memory, so I'm certainly not trying to come down on anybody, but when you look at the Marquez fight and you look at this fight, the thing that stuck out in my mind was just how often they were able to make Pacquiao miss punches. Now, another judge could turn around, regardless of what's landing. In his mind, the thing that appeals to his taste, the thing that appeals to his eye, could be the guy throwing the punches. As a trainer, as somebody who understands the science of boxing, getting out of the way of that freight train and making a guy miss that you've got him shadow boxing in the ring, to me, that's beautiful. You know, to me, that gives you the edge. If you score a couple of shots after you've made a guy hit nothing but air, to me, that gives me the edge. That's what I appreciate, because I appreciate the science of the sport. To break it down as simply as a street fight and who beats who up is not the way to score a fight. And that's why I think if you would get trainers judging fights besides judges or television commentators, you'll often get a different score, because trainers appreciate the science more of the fight and they look for different things and more subtleties that the human eye and certainly broadcasters' eyes definitely do not see. You know, they were things that Foreman used to see. They were things that Roy used to see. They were things that Lennox used to see. Lennox
right.
was good at seeing that. They were things that Angelo Dundee and Gil Clancy were brilliant at seeing back in the day when they were doing Sports Spectacular, you know, CBS Sports Spectacular. They could see those things that made you understand what is the difference between winning a round and losing a round. And sometimes I think that we don't educate our audience well enough in that art, and we pop up this the CompuBox thing and use that as the learning tool for people, or the guide as to who's winning.
To me, and you know what, I agree with you in all of that, because there's times where I even will criticize the in between rounds, where we see trainers nowadays that really shouldn't even be trainers. Let's be honest, they walk into a gym and they learn a few hand mitt jobs and then they call themselves a trainer, but I've criticized it a whole lot, where I feel that the broadcasters of nowadays, there is no educational mark. You know, the copy box to me is a shortcut of getting away of calling what is really happening in front of us. You know, when in between those rounds, you would hear the trainers saying something like, "You got to step it up." But at the same time, it's almost as close as the commentary of them coloring the fight, because those trainers are saying, "You got to step it up," but they're not giving any direction. They're not telling their fighter how they're supposed to step it up or what they're supposed to do, you know, how they're supposed to eliminate the other guy's jab, or how you're supposed to step around his front foot, you know, so you can get in a right hook to the body. Those things, I think, in our sport, not just with the commentary, has been a lost art for quite some time.
That's a very, very astute point, Dave. And obviously, you must watch and study this to realize this, because, you know, having been in the game 33 years myself, and having, as a kid, while other kids were studying fighters, I was studying trainers. I started coaching, when I was 18 years old. My heroes were Freddie Brown and Ray Arcel and Dundee, and these were the Eddie Futch. These were the guys that I watched. These were the guys I listened to. These were the guys that I watched when I go to a fight. I'd watch how they work in a corner. You know, I knew Ralph Citro, who started what is now the equivalent of BoxRec, but he started the computer scoring system, and I watched him be a magician in a corner working cuts, so much so that Emmanuel Stewart hired him for all of the Kronk fighters fights up until his death. I studied the way these guys worked, the veterans who understood what it was like to work in 1 minute of corner, what it was like to give advice. And now what I'm seeing, and I see it in my sport every day in this city, where is people, "Oh yeah, you're my friend, you're a sponsor, you can come and be in my corner." You know, it's my friend, it's my pal,
right.
It's my buddy, you know, he helps me out, you know, and, "Hey, come on, man, you can do this, you got to go, man, you got to work, come on, man, what are you doing, you got to..."
Right.
You know, this is, that's not professional, you know, and watch all the greats and how they worked, and there's a big difference of the way fighters, there's a difference the way fighters fight today, and there's a difference the way trainers train. Like you said, now it's all about who's going to do hand pads. You know, "Oh, if you do hand pads, you're a great coach." You know, that's what they look for. It's great for television. You do hand pads, that's wonderful. You know, "You hit my body, okay, great." You know, it's, but we've lost the teaching.
And you know, just to bring in the whole hand pad here. And the reason I brought this up is because you guys have your take of what happened with Lara and Hernandez. And I've spoken to plenty of trainers, old-time trainers, and they've all told me hand mitts is something that shouldn't really be used. We didn't need them back in those days. Why do you use them now? And one stuck out on my mind, and this was a trainer. His last name was Ortiz in San Francisco. And one thing he told me, he said, hand mitts sometimes can stop a fighter from being fluent. And at that time, I didn't understand what he meant. But later on in watching fights and sitting down and analyzing fighters when they're doing things, he was absolutely right with the hand mitts. Because if you saw in the Lara fight, he would throw a combination and then stop and pause and kind of look at what he did. And then he needed something to follow up behind that, but it took him seconds. Where other guys, if you go back and you look in the 80s, you'd see guys that were fluent. You know, if they miss with that right hand, they automatically corrected it and try to catch you with finishing of a left hook. I don't see that with fighters nowadays, you know, and I think that's a big problem in our sport.
I don't know that can be blamed on the hand pad as much as on the trainer himself. I think that personally, like my use of the hand pad is a teaching tool. It's an opportunity to put, you know, you want to teach somebody to do something, put it in motion before he starts to spar, or, you know, you're teaching him a new move, or beginning fighters that you want to correct something with, and you get them in front of you so you can touch their leg and hold put their foot in the right place, put their hand there, say, okay, do this, do that, turn it over, use it for that. It's gotten to the point where it's gone beyond that. I was using pads back in the early 80s, but as a teaching tool. Now it's gone back to, like, this is the trainer show now. You know, this is the trainer show. Watch me. Pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa. Where the trainer is throwing his hands at the boxer's gloves faster than the boxer can be throwing the punches back at him. And he's just slapping the heck out of the guy's gloves. It's
right.
You know, I think the whole idea of teaching the subtleties of the sport, which you mentioned earlier, Gabe, you know, the subtleties of infighting. Go back and watch Charlie Burley. Go watch tapes of Charlie Burley. Go watch Georgie Benton fight. Go watch Ruben Hurricane Carter. Go watch Ezra Charles. Go watch Jersey Joe Walker. Watch how guys used to fight on the inside, how smooth and how pretty they were, how they could roll up on the inside, block punches, roll away. Go watch fighters like Nicolino Lochi, and, you know, which was an advanced version of what Floyd is. And you'll see greatness. You'll see what it is, what the fundamentals of boxing are. But unfortunately, as the sport ages, teachers come along and they're dying off and they're aging. We can't expect people to teach what they don't know. And that's turning into now where we're finding ways to try to compensate for that. And it's funny that we're going down this road on this. It's great that the conversation has gone this way. But, you know, back in the day, we didn't have strength and conditioning coaches. We didn't have nutritionists. We didn't have body masseuses, you know, like going quick. Now, guys have nutritionists and whatnot, and they're still not making weight, and they're weighing in the day before the fight.
Right.
Back in the day, you only had a trainer telling your guy, okay, make sure you eat good, spaghetti before your fight, have a steak the night before, blah, blah, blah. This is what you got to do. Make sure you run, keep your weight down. Guys were making weight the day of the fight. Now they can't even make it the day before, and we've got all the science in the world to teach you how to take your weight off.
It is. It's baffling.
They don't fight that often anymore. They don't have the discipline. The skill is kind of blurring. And certainly the guidance. There's very few of you guys that are actually experienced at this. The guys that apprentice, like I talked to, like Joe Goosen, he apprenticed for like 10 years here at the Main Street Gym under Howie Steidler, and learned his craft from a guy that had probably, you know, been doing the same thing before he became a great trainer.
Absolutely. And another one of the guys I watched, yeah.
Howie Steidler?
Yeah.
What did we're waiting here for Gary Russell to call in, and you kind of threw out a lot of the older names. And Jimmy Bivens passed away, and somebody mentioned that to me on Twitter that we should talk about it. You know, a heavyweight boxer. He fought from 1940 to 1955. He's out of Georgia. Do you have anything to share in that regard, Russ?
I know the name of Jimmy Bivens very, very well. Great fighter. Again, an old school type guy, you know, cut from that same mold of the names I mentioned to you earlier. You know, unfortunately, I didn't get to see him fight, obviously, but certainly as a historian, I certainly know of Jimmy Bivens. There's no doubt about it. But you're right, Gabe. Like, we don't get this today. We don't see it. I think today fighters are more interested in their brand, you know, in their brand recognition, and they think that because they see that they have a Facebook account and they're on Twitter and somebody has posted a YouTube video of them that they're mega stars. But yet there's nobody or very few. Like, you could probably fill a phone booth with the number of professional fighters in boxing today who can fill an arena.
Right.
Yeah.
You got great fighters. There's no doubt there's great fighters out there. Lots of great fighters. But how many can fill an arena?
Not many.
Very few. You know,
that's a place that boxing is lacking as well. If we could just, before we get off the complete subject of the judging, and I know that, you know, we've bashed HBO pretty hard and we beat that enough. I think, though, having said all that about HBO, I think there also has to be some evolution and development among the way we rank, keep track of, record what judges do when they're scoring fights. We keep fighters' records. Why aren't we keeping officials' records and giving the ones who give the best calls the most work and bringing them back to bat more often instead of bringing back people who continuously make errors that inevitably cost fighters potentially millions of dollars. Let's just say hundreds of thousands of dollars. And yet those referees or judges, because of their poor action, it's not recorded. Nobody else knows about it. There's no way of tracking it. There's not an association that governs or has a group that governs the officials to keep track of what they do right, what they do wrong, have them, you know, graded on their work, graded on their performance. And I think that that's something that probably in this day and age, it's time has come.
I agree with that. Yeah. It's, you know, somebody said that they're hearing a lot of the sport isn't what it was from you. I don't agree. I think that, well, one, I do agree that the sport isn't, the fighters aren't what they were. They aren't as prepared. We've watered ourselves down, and maybe because there's more, I don't know, TV dates available or whatever it is, why that's happened, why there aren't as many good trainers. You would think that the fights would be quality because there's so few of them now, because TV dates, they happen throughout the year, but the fighters that get those dates, they only fight like twice a year. There's only a select few guys get them. You would think that the quality, once they got there, would be better because they're so special, because they're so rare. But I think the exact opposite. They don't fight enough. And also, to your point, I think that's a great point. If you screw up all during the year in the regular football season, or you make bad calls all through the year in MLB or basketball, you're not in the finals. You're not in the football.
Right.
You're not in the series. And those things are prestige gigs where you make a little more money, and it's a prestige gig. It's an honor.
Yep.
And yet we get gratuitous Gail Van Hoy over and over and over again, you know, a blind bad judge. So much so that that name is like a punchline. It doesn't make any sense. But boxing likes to be in the dark. They like to be not that good, you know, and kind of screw up and say, shrug their shoulders and say, well, that's boxing. Yeah, the guy got robbed, but they both made money, so screw it.
That's because their admittance otherwise would be tantamount to their guilt of being part of a inept system.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, and that's exactly right. You know, it's amazing how many things could be done to fix this sport, even from a question of transparency, and that there should have been some evolution. But even if you make the statement that you just made, Gabe, regarding promoters, there are no more promoters in the game. There are no more guys who have to rely on selling tickets, putting asses in seats.
Right.
There's no more of them. They're gone. You know, now casinos bred the lazy promoter. Oh,
yes.
How much you want me to bring a fight to your casino? Great. How much are you giving me? Well, we'll give you $50,000 to put it in. The guy scratches his head. $50,000?
man, I can put that show on for 30 and put 20 in my pocket. I'm in.
Exactly.
You know, and that's what became. It didn't matter. And how many fights did we see on USA Network, ESPN Friday Night Fights, whatever, of venues that are empty and they're begging for people to be in there because the promoter's already been paid, he's already made his money, he didn't have to have a press conference, he didn't have to put out any press releases, he didn't have to take any sports writers out to dinner so that they would write stories for him, he didn't have to do none of that because it's all been paid for.
Exactly.
And as a result of that, this is the product that we're left with, you know. And
right.
I hate to say, Aram might be the last of those guys, you know.
That's what I was going to say when you said there's no promoters. I would say Bob Arum is still one of those promoters. Sauerland is very much that over in Europe.
I like Kathy Duva.
They certainly are doing well in Kathy Duva and up in, you know, Yvonne Michel up in Canada. But that's – we need more than that.
Of course.
We're going to get it done. You know, and the rest of the guys, the TV packagers is who you're talking about, you know. And, I mean, we're naming names here, the Gary Shaws and Lou DiBellas, guys that don't do – I mean, they argue over paying money for a buffet, you know. They don't – or a conference call, rather.
Yeah.
Gary didn't do that for you know, with Chad Dawson. We didn't get any sort of press with him. I'm just barely getting some now for Dawson and Ward. I think Dan Goosen is capable of being a promoter when he wants to be, and I think he's done a nice job with Andre Ward. But that's just too few and far between.
I'm not necessarily trying to pick on anybody when I say this, and I'm not talking about the promoters who already have these high profile guys. I'm talking about what the Duvas used to do, what Main Events used to do when they got guys out of the amateurs and they were filling the Ice Palace in New Jersey, you know, with fights, you know, keeping it busy. And I remember I used to go down there with John Davenport and Harold Knight at the Second Street Youth Center, and I was part of the New Jersey fight scene. I knew what it was like. There was no – we didn't have the internet. We didn't have, you know, pay-per-views. I, you know, used to watch the big fights on a closed circuit, and you used to develop fighters in arenas. You know, you'd pay tickets. People would know their name. There'd be stories in the newspapers. You would develop these names to the point where when they got to these big fights, they would know who they were and the fight was and it was big. But it just seems that that's going the way of the dodo bird. It seems like it's being more and more difficult to come along with these development venues where fighters can fight, where you can get on cards, where there's regular fights and people are paying tickets, you know, not expensive tickets, but they're paying to go to the fights, you know, whether it's be at the Blue Horizon or wherever it is that they're going to the fights. And when you don't have that, it's hard to develop fighters. And then when you don't develop fighters, it's hard to get the greatness, you know, later on in their careers. And I think a proof of that is, you know, the dismal performance of the so-called American heavyweight right now, that we're, you know, the largest country in the world and maybe certainly the biggest boxing country in the world is unable to produce, you know, a quantity of American heavyweights, and that's hurting.
It is hurting. You know, let me throw in my two cents about that though too, because I don't solely just blame promoters that decided to become lazy, because obviously the casinos helped out with that. I mean, you know, in the real world, which I don't understand, these are corporate people. How do they make up a contract giving up all their money and not worried about the return for it? I don't understand something like that, because, you know, when you're doing – if you're in a construction site, you don't pay the subcontractor the full amount because you know that they're not going to show up the following day, scheduled dates. You pay them by increment. But what I want to go to is that even with the promoters and how to build them, I think in a lot of ways that the way our society is built now, it's kind of ruined that old traditional way of building fighters. You got the internet, and let's be honest, it's not just the promoters that are lazy, it's the fans themselves. A lot of fans don't want to get up.
Absolutely.
You know? They really don't want to get up. They have the internet, they got YouTube. How many outlets now is it much easier for them of not leaving their home? And just to throw in another one, there's fighters too that are turning over as an amateur to a professional that, just like you mentioned, and I've had my rant about them having Facebook and Twitter, that they've overpriced themselves out before they even got themselves in the ring or even proven that they're worth that stat. I think there's a lot of things in the sport of boxing that have had a little bit too much of a mess. And you know what? Unfortunately, we don't have anything to really go – I mean, that's why we have history. But there's really no history of fixing the mess up we have right now.
No, except the star. And, you know, I wasn't blaming only the promoters. I was just, you know,
right.
echoing
no.
what Gabe has said about the fighters. It's all parts of the sport, you know, have a malaise, and we're not doing anything to remedy them. And then at the end of the day, now we've come full circle almost now. We're going to go right back to the television networks, who then turn around and bash it. You know, what they're asking you to pay to watch, they turn around and bash it or tell you how awful it is. So we've come full circle in the discussion. But I think there's no doubt about it that, you know, boxing has its ailments that it has to fix. And I think that we're one sport, and certainly the fighters are as guilty of this, if not anybody else, you know, of learning from our past, learning from the history. And, you know, fighters today will continue to make the same mistake and stumble at the first obstacle or adversity, and because of they're not taking their training seriously enough, or because they think they're a star. And the history of the sport is filled with fighters who have made the same mistake, yet nobody heeds the example set forth by others, because we're so, you know, egomaniacal in our own right, thinking that it doesn't matter what them guys did, man. I'm what it is now. I'm the best.
Right.
Don't forget what happened before. You know, I'm the best now. So, you know, I know what I'm doing. And, you know, it's sad that we don't learn from that. And you know what? As the saying goes, those who don't learn from history are condemned to repeat it. And that's what happens in our sport time and time again. We don't learn from bad decisions. We don't try to fix them. We even don't allow for transparency by governing bodies. Gabe, we spoke about this yesterday with the incident that happened in Texas, where, you know, the Andy Lee camp wanted the gloves weighed before the fight, a perfectly legitimate request that should have been honored and exercised by the commission. To, if only for reasons of transparency and fairness, there's nothing. No one's asking them to rip the gloves apart. They just asked them to weigh them, and they declined. And when you know, how can you be doing that? This is the 21st century. How can you be doing that, you know, in this day and age? And for a simple request of saying, let's make sure that the gloves weigh 10 ounces. And I can tell you as a fact, as a manufacturer of boxing equipment, as somebody who has sold boxing equipment since 1985, who has made stuff with my hands, I can tell you that you can take the same pattern, make two gloves, and there could be a discrepancy of, you know, a half an ounce, there could be changes depending. It's a natural fiber, natural materials that you're dealing with that have different consistencies. There could be a difference in the weight. There could be. You know, it's not impossible for that to happen. And
they look different on TV, that's for sure.
You know what? Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
Right.
But you could have said, I know, because the commission waited in front of me, and then you have nothing to say after that, you know?
Exactly.
The same thing with like we talked about yesterday, Gabe, with the doping issues, you know? And I told you what my feelings were on that. And, you know, until we get our head out of the sand, we're still going to continue to have controversy in that.
Russ, let me ask you this, okay, because I've asked – we had the president of the promoters
Boxing Promoters Association. Joe DiGuardia.
Yeah, we had him on.
From New York.
From New York,
right.
Yes. You know, promoter for Star Boxing. I asked him this, I've asked a numerous amount of people the same question is, how are these judges being selected? And what does it take to become a judge? What kind of criteria do they need to bring? What background? But same thing with the commissioners. You know, how are they being selected and appointed for these certain positions? Do you know the answer to that?
I don't think that there's one answer that applies to every state or in my case in every province or anywhere that's the same. Which is another, you know, absolutely insane thing that's going on, is that boxing commissions are not able to get together and say, you know what, we're going to have one set of uniform rules for everybody.
Right.
That's it. You know, the same medicals apply everywhere. You get licensed. If you're a member of the association, like we already have the Association of Boxing Commissions. Why aren't they entitled
to more power, where it could be so easy for them to turn around. And I guess it's on the same thinkings of a national commission, but it just doesn't make sense that, you know, somebody in New Jersey knows something that somebody in New York doesn't, and that's why their medicals are different, and that's why their licensing is different, and that's why they want, you know, such and such testing instead of other testing. And it just doesn't make sense, you know. Like, we've been in this sport long enough. There's enough research that's been done that, you know, we could have. You know, you play in any ballpark in America, the rules are the same. You know, there's no changing. If you're in the American League, you got a designated hitter. If you're not, you don't. It's that simple. You know, the American League doesn't have 95-foot base paths, and National League has 90. You know, it doesn't. And I think the rules, you know, in a commission, when you get licensed, should be the same. There should be some uniformity when weigh-ins are held. You know, especially things that concern safety should be the same everywhere you go, so you're not subject to surprise. And that's, I think, you know, another danger that exists, that everybody wants to be their own boss. But to answer your question, no, I don't know what the criteria is. And the other thing you have to sometimes ask yourself is, when you have a commissioner that's selected, should he know something about boxing, or should
right.
he be there to enforce the rules and ensure the protection? You know, that's a crazy question, right? Like, because when you have someone who knows boxing, well, he might not agree with somebody else who thinks he knows boxing, right? But when you have somebody who's not trying to be there knowing boxing, he's trying to be there to enforce the protection of the fighters, make sure that everything is carried out legitimately, correctly, making sure the fighters are paid, making sure that the ring is safe, making this, so you don't have guys flying out of the ring like we do in California sometimes, you know,
right.
and making sure everything is tied down properly. You know, I mean, it's a tough, tough call to make. I don't know what the criteria is for a judge. Do you just have to be somebody who can look, see who wins, and then put it on paper when you're finished? And obviously that system in itself is flawed, because very rarely do you come up with judges whose scorecards match. At the end, the
right.
numbers might match. Like, they might all be – but the rounds that they give to each guy don't match. So
yeah.
What criteria could you possibly have?
I don't know. I mean, you know, when we had on Joe, we were discussing, which they haven't formed up and – presented yet with us, is how do they find a judge? Because that's what's basically what the conversation is, how to select a judge, how to educate them, and how to score a fight, you know. And one of my suggestions was, how about sit them down and let them judge three past fights and have them jot down what he was scoring. Was it the punch stat? Was it the ring generalship? You know, what exactly did he see? And then you'll get a more or less know this guy either watches the sport or he doesn't watch the sport at all, and he doesn't know what he's watching.
Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes the people that you think have been in the sport so long who should know what they're watching, I think we've seen more than enough evidence that they do not. So
yeah.
What do you do then?
Yeah, how about...
Sometimes it's just their buddy, you know. Sometimes it's just...
Right.
Guy that's kind of connected. A lot of that seems to be happening over here in California with this commission, and one of the reasons they're so under siege right now. It's just the sport, like you said, we need more transparency. We need uniform rules. We need universal policy on drug testing. We need so many things. We need to get these guys pensions, some health care, all kinds of things. I mean, top to bottom, I don't think the sport's gone to seed. I don't even think it's run aground where it's going to stop or die, but it just seems in the year 2012, when we're still, you know, this is a pretty barbaric sport. We're still having two guys go in there and beat each other up for money, and we all watch and enjoy it. It doesn't make any sense to me that we're so ass backwards with everything else that's around it. If we're going to be that primitive, having two guys fight for money, shouldn't everything else around it be state-of-the-art and as good as it can possibly be? It doesn't make any sense to be any other way.
You know, Gabe, that's a heck of a point, because it seems that the only two things that matter are ticket sales and the revenue for the fight, or a pay-per-view or whatever it is, and how pretty it looks for television. That's all that matters. It doesn't matter that there isn't enough chairs in the corner for the cornermen to work. It doesn't matter that the access for the stairs is terrible. It doesn't matter that the ropes are loose. It doesn't matter that, you know, the guys are not doing good jobs in the corner, that they're using. And you can see it on TV where they're using illegal substances in the corner. They're using stuff that should not be allowed to be used, but because the inspector doesn't know what to look for, doesn't know if it's illegal or not, you know, and then they turn around and tell you, yeah, but you can't use ice in an ice bag. You have to put it in a clear plastic bag. Why? Why? What difference does it make? You know, like, we put our, and then, oh, you better be careful how you wrap that hand. Oh, that's a lot of gauze you're putting there. It's cotton. It's cotton. Are you serious? You know, we should be looking at things that are far more dangerous to the fighter than this. We have fighters today who there is probably, again, the same handful of fighters who could fill an arena. You probably have a handful of fighters today who are genuinely fighting in their proper, legitimate weight class. There's probably only a handful of fighters in boxing today who could fight in their weight class that they're in today if the weigh-in was held same day.
Right.
So, I mean, we're seeing fighters, guys going in there. Julio Cesar Chavez goes into the ring above the light heavyweight limit as a middleweight.
Ridiculous.
How can that be?
Yeah.
He goes in as a cruiser. He's basically a small cruiser.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what's interesting to me. I mean, a year ago, I just thought he was too slow and his defense was terrible. Now I look at him, he's going to be a problem for Sergio. He's going to be pressing Sergio all around because that dude comes in at 165. He's a true, he's more of a 154, but he's kind of a true middleweight. And there's no such thing, there's very few that are such thing as a true to their weight class. You're absolutely right. I think the guy that I got to call in here, because we're about 30 minutes past on him and I don't know where he went. He was supposed to call us, I think, is Gary Russell. I think he's kind of a true feather. Looking at him up close physically, he's one of the few guys I think he's not really going to have a lot of room to move up. He's got kind of a small frame. Maybe he can get to 130. I don't see him as growing into a lightweight, but that's pretty rare anymore. Like, Roner seems gigantic for 130.
Huge. It's crazy. You know, Jean Pascal might be another one who makes light heavy without any problem. You know, he could make it. Lucian Bute would never be able to fight at super middle if he had to weigh in the same day. Never. Impossible.
Right.
Way too dehydrated. But with modern science and technology, we're able to bring him down, dry him out completely, like a dry face cloth. I mean, wring him out completely, but then we have ample time and technology of rehydrating him. And he comes back into the ring, you know, at 185, 187 pounds, 190 pounds, you know, solid, big, strong. Say, this was the same guy I saw yesterday at the weigh-in? It's crazy, you know. And I know that it's for the safety. I know, I understand, because the fighters will go and hurt themselves otherwise. But it's wrong. It's wrong, and when they do it for money, and they're still not making weight. Guys are still coming in overweight, and it's just crazy.
Well, that's because they perverted the system. Before, it used to be, well, you know, if you're in around your weight class, you know, you can still, you're still draining out to get there to make sure that you get the weight. But you're not blowing up 20, 30 pounds or, you know, 18 to 25 pounds.
No.
You're just properly hydrating. Now, guys have perverted the system, like you're saying. Like, yeah, they've dropped down 20 pounds, 25 pounds, and that's just not, it isn't fair. It's an unfair advantage. You're absolutely
well,
right.
Well, it's ridiculed it, right? Like, the guys are not legitimately what they say they are. So, you know, and I thought about that actually in the Pacquiao-Bradley fight, and I'm looking at both these guys, and I said, could you legitimately see somebody like Jimmy Lennon Sr. introducing in the red corner from Detroit, weighing in at 147 pounds, the hitman, Tommy Hearns, and in the opposite corner, Pacquiao or Bradley?
Yeah.
I mean, at 147 pounds, I mean, it's just, what? Are you kidding? Like, it's
right.
A world apart, man. It's a world apart. How did those guys get up to that weight? It's crazy. It's nuts. It's nuts.
Physical specimens, because he fought it. He was a junior middle in the amateurs. you know, and he's actually come all the way down to 140.
Right.
He's kind of a trip. He almost reminds me of Cotto in his body, and that they're kind of like these weird tweeners. He's not quite a welterweight, but sooner or later, now he's left 140. He's kind of outgrown it just physically.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's kind of a trip, but
it is. Gentlemen, listen, you know, it was great doing this with you. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely,
and,
a pleasure.
You know, I hope we can do this more often because it's great to talk boxing, you know, at another level and look at things from a different perspective and get a perspective from different people, not only you know, from a mindset, but from a geographical point as well. You know, we got East and West Coast here, you know, talking boxing, and it's great, and I hope you'll give me the opportunity to do this again.
Oh, anytime, Russ. Thanks for coming on. I really enjoyed, hearing from you and speaking to you.
Well, I hope we get to do it again. And I as well, you guys were great. And have a great night, a great weekend, and hopefully we'll talk soon again.
We will.
All right, man. All the best, guys. All
right, okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
It's the Russ Amber Hour. That was awesome.
Yeah, I really, honestly, I liked what he had to say. I it was refreshing, in my opinion, you know, and sometimes what I like or what I, you know, want to watch or listen to, it's not everybody's, choice. But I like, you know, because we had a few people thinking that, I don't know, I don't know what's going on, Dave. Today seems like the night you guys just want to bash our sport. And you know what? In order to fix what is going on in our sport, I think that we need to hash at it, and we need to rant about it, and then we need to sit back and say, okay, where do we start to fix what is going on? Because that's where I'm at my point of the sport of boxing. I'm really at, how do we fix this? How do we contribute in trying to fix this, you know? Obviously, with the PEDs, you know, that was one start, which, you know, we're still continuing on that, you know, on that avenue. But we have, like, 4, 5, 7, 8 different other avenues. And when you have so many, you know, so many different directions what road you can go up to, that's what ends up kind of, you know, you have to sit back and go, okay, what do we have to do? And how do we get from point A with all these freeways in front of us to get to point B?
Exactly,
you know?
Right. I don't disagree with, you know, criticism is a good thing. You know,
I believe,
like you're saying, look at it from a different perspective, you know, other than your own. Let me call Gary Russell.
Go right ahead.
I didn't blow it by not calling him earlier, but.
You know, and in the choice of words or the choice of outlook that we may have on here may not be the one you have, but at the end of the day, if you just try to open your mind and listen to what another person's point of view of what's going on in the sport, it's not really they're knocking it, but at the same time, I could really hear that Russ was trying to find a solution in the correcting what has happened. You know, I mean, I wanted to put in my two cents too as well with I think media has a big fault in what has been going on in our sport, because to me there's a lot of media guys, you know, that they're more concerned of having their friendship with fighters or their friendship with the promoters, and you know, and it becomes watered down journalism. There's no truthness to it because they're afraid to extend that truth to the listeners and to the viewers, because they don't want to cut that pipeline that they have. And I don't think that's the way you're supposed to do things. You know, I don't think that if you're going to be in this business of media, you should be, hey, that's my buddy, or that's my family member, or this and that. Because in end of the day, they're not. They don't bleed, you know, they don't have the same bloodline in your veins. You know, I mean, have I, you know, got to really know certain fighters? You're absolutely. But as soon as I have to say the truth of what I feel needs to be said, guess what? I am no longer the go-to person guy to speak to. Because, you know, there's no upside and downside of being media. There's only a straight line, and that straight line is to say the truth. And I really, truly believe that. And I think that if all media got on the same line and they all said, you know what, we need to tackle these certain areas in our sport, then...
Three. For more options, press 4. To count...
That's Gabriel. He got dropped off. He's calling back in, so let me get him back on with us and stuff. But like
can
I
you
said,
hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
To send your message, press 1 at any time. To listen...
And just to make my point real quick, is that if all media decided to tackle the areas that really need attention, I think we can make a huge dent, you know, a very huge dent. But like I said, not just with the sport itself being watered down, with the matches and how things are being handled in the business area, I think in media itself too has watered down and really let go the bite, the dog bite that old journalism had back in the 80s and 90s.
I agree. Gary, are you there?
I'm definitely here.
Oh, right. We're all here together now. All
right.
I'm here with Gary Russell, Mr. Gary Russell Jr. Some say he is the top prospect in the world. Some are saying the top featherweight prospect. In my opinion, he's probably the top prospect in any division. Certainly some of the fastest hands I've ever seen. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Thanks, man. I'm definitely glad that you guys wanted me on the show, man. I definitely appreciate it.
Always want you on the show, brother. Always want you on the show. We're just happy that you came on, man.
Well, that was kind of funny, Dave. I thought we were actually on the radio. We started the interview without you, and then I realized Dave hasn't said anything. So we guys should fall into the show. So, Dave, I'll pass it to you so I don't repeat the same old question to Gary, and we'll get back to that one in a bit. How do you begin?
You know, Gary, everybody is really fascinated with you, and there's a lot of folks that have very high hopes of what you can do in your career, you know, and immediately after your fight, which is congratulations on your win, the name Juanma Lopez was brought up. What are your thoughts? Do you think that with the expectations that people have of you, that you have to meet them and you might be a bit rushed, so that's why you feel you have to take on these, bigger names or tougher fights? Or are you comfortable with that, you know, in terms of like, you know what, this is the moment for me to do that. This is the moment for me to step it up.
Oh, I'm definitely comfortable with that. We are 100% content. Well, I'm 100% content with how my career has been handled by my management team as well as my dad, who is also my coach. It's very, very difficult to get us to do something that we don't want to do. But I'm very comfortable. I feel as though that I definitely am ready to step up the competition. We see a lot of flaws and a lot of guys that's in my weight division, guys that's been winning. We see flaws. We see certain fighters that aren't really technically sound, you know, that we can capitalize on. So I'm definitely ready. I'm all for it. And actually, we were the ones who brought up the name Juan Manuel Lopez. It's that time. It's definitely about that time. Actually, the fight that fell through was Luis Franco. We were supposed to compete against him, which was the IBF eliminator, which was lining us up for a title shot, but the fight fell through. So we settled to compete against Christopher Perez. But it's definitely that time for us to actually start climbing up the ladder.
Going after Lopez, here's a guy that was suspended because of his I guess you could say his rant about the referee in his last fight with Salido in the post-interview. Is it all about timing in your guys' part? I mean, you see a guy being laid off for almost a year, is going to come back. Is the timing correct for you guys? And do you think, just with that timing alone, do you think you're going to get the credit that you deserve by beating a guy that is a recognizable champion, a tough champion, but has been laid off from boxing, and really, in my opinion, if I was part of their camp, I would say stay away from this kid right now because you've been gone for a while.
Most definitely. We feel as though that most camps are going to tell their fighters to stay away from me. I feel as though that I'm a threat to anyone in this division. But no, we are one that really don't pay too much mind about the criticism. It's everything happens on our time, and this is my career. No one is going to step in the ring and face these guys but me. You know, it's always so many people that talks about what they should do, what should do or should not do. But at the end of the day, the only one that's life is really on the line and is in jeopardy is the fighter. You know, we are fully so of who we compete against, when we compete, you know, and just how. We're really not taking too much concern as far as how they were worried about his layoff and everything. I had a seven-month layoff. I didn't get a chance to fight for 7 months based on the fact that it was fights fell through. I injured myself. I really wasn't 100% going into this fight because of my ankle injury. I still felt that. But at the same time, I came back and I still performed up to par in my eyes.
Right.
You know, I don't feel as though that would be something that a lot of people would try to use. But then again, you never know.
Absolutely. And yeah, I got to tell you, first off, man, you know, I actually, when hearing that you want that fight, it really got me going, like, that's a fight I like to see. You know, Obama brings a huge crowd. He's got all Puerto Rico, the island behind him. If that fight was agreed on, the terms, the money, the site, and what the site would be, I was thinking, is that Lopez is going to want to keep it where he's comfortable at, in Puerto Rico. Is that something you guys are willing to do and jump on right away?
Actually, no. I don't feel as though that it would be a smart move on our hand based on the fact to give him a little bit of an edge based on the fact that it's his hometown. We would definitely like to fight on neutral grounds. We want things to be fair. I feel as though that the best boxer should win. A lot of times when fighters fight in their hometown, the judges are a little more lenient, you know, and stuff of that nature, you know. So it's still a business. I would love for the fight to happen, but it's still a business. You have to be smart and you have to think, and thinking is definitely majority of the battle.
Now, I don't know if you heard that big old, from all the fans in the world right now, man, when you just said that. But I agree with you, man. I agree with you. Because, you know, everybody's like, oh, man, it ain't going to happen now. Because, you know, Lopez and them, they're going to be, you know, they're going to be fighting for Puerto Rico. But, hey, I agree with you. It is a business. And, you know, at the end of the day, you got to take care of yourself and you have to make the right moves. But just to play devil advocate really quick, though, is that he is the established fighter. He has the following, you know what I mean, that is going to fill up that whole arena. And I think some fans right now will be the only thing they're hearing is that you won't go to Puerto Rico because of the judging. But some of the fans are being like, well, wait a minute, Russ, you got the faster hands. What do you mean? Why can't you just knock out the guy the way Salido did it?
Definitely. Like I said, I never said that we wouldn't. I said that it would probably be in our best interest not to. once again, this is just me basically speaking. I still have to go over this conversation with my team, you know, my management team, my coaching staff and everything. I am fully equipped to definitely go to Puerto Rico and not get handed a W. I'm fully equipped to go over there and actually take it. You know, I'm definitely ready. I feel as though that he is a strong fighter. He's strong, but he lacks just a lot of stuff, man, that we can definitely capitalize on. And honestly, I feel as though that would be a very, very easy fight.
He's not a defensive genius, that's for sure.
Most definitely, you know. And guys that's not a good defensive, man, will have problems when it comes to me.
There's something interesting that you did in this fight. Use stillness a lot, where you would kind of be using head movement, and then you would go completely still, particularly right before you kind of finished him off. Have I seen that you're like, you actually just kind of just dead stopping and kind of waiting for him to do something and then reacting off of that? You were always right there, but you weren't like letting your hands go completely. You were kind of letting him do something and then you were reacting off of it. Was that stillness kind of part of that, trying to get him to do something?
Oh, most definitely. It's weird, man, because a lot of people, just a lot of my fans feel as though that I'm such of a great by seeing a little bit of what I have to offer. I don't feel as though my fans have actually got a chance to see all of Gary Russell Jr.
Yeah, there was, you only got your 20 fights in, and that's what I'm kind of curious. I mean, there's every time I see you fight, I see a little different aspect, and you had a little bit of a growing period, in my opinion, in the two fights with the one with Eric Estrada and then with Leonel Miranda, where you were extended the distance. I thought those fights were nice learning lessons for you. What do you think you're at in terms of your development as a fighter, as a pro? Are you comfortable now? I mean, early on you had some hand injury stuff, but that doesn't seem to be a problem. And I kind of attributed that more like a rookie wide receiver who kind of gets dinged up a little bit, moving from the college ranks to what the pro ranks are all about.
I definitely do feel as though I passed it. Like I say, I had a tremendous amateur pedigree, but you can't prepare for taking off the headgear, the smaller gloves, you know, stuff like that. I'm a pretty decent puncher, you know. Basically, 50% of my fights have ended in knockouts, something like that. And I'm a pretty decent puncher, and a lot of times when you hit these guys upside the head by not being as accurate as you should be, you know, you tend to take little injuries. So we're a little more poised now. We're a little more precise as far as picking out punches. You don't really see me shoot too many wasted shots.
No.
You don't see me shoot too many wasted shots. We're definitely picking out punches. Everything is accurate. And just maintain the level of poise and composure in the ring, no matter what the situation is. It's like being in the eye of a tornado and trying to maintain that composure no matter what's going on around you. That's where we're working at.
I've always looked at that. The boxing is kind of, it's controlled chaos, you know?
Exactly.
We have all these rules and everything. The bell rings, you know, for 3 minutes, shit's going to get crazy, but it will end in 3 minutes, hopefully, sometimes sooner. But, yeah, you're trying to control it and trying to control the other guy. I'm curious, you know, jumping from, I've noticed this, we had another Al Haymon signed fighter, Chris Pearson, on, and we were talking about this, about the way Al kind of sometimes develops guys and does it a little bit like, you know, you're fighting guys that you should beat for a long period of time on a straight line, and then, boom, you jump up in weight class or, you know, in terms of experience class. Danny Jacobs against Pirog, that was one where he kind of went from fighting dudes a little bit smaller to fighting a natural, you know, middleweight. Danny also had a lot of personal stuff going on going into that fight, but it was kind of all of a sudden he just jumped up in level. Berto did the same thing with Colazzo. Don't you want to kind of ramp up the violence just a little bit more, maybe get, or do you look at Lopez as that, as kind of an ex-champion, and it's a logical progression, that's who I should fight?
Oh, I definitely feel as though it's a logical progression. I feel as though that we have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of people tend to sway away from the plan, sway from the game plan as things go on. I think the guys that tend to get everything out of it that they wanted are the ones that stick to the game plan. When we look at it this specifically, it's basically who are the big-name guys. All the big-name guys are really completely gone now. It's the Roy Jones Jr., the Felix Trinidad, the Oscar De La Hoyas, you know, all of these guys are really not in the picture. Now is Floyd Mayweather and Pacquiao. I honestly believe after Bradley and Pacquiao fight the rematch, Floyd will be returned home, and Pacquiao and Floyd will have this mega fight. After that, there's no one else there that's reasonable for these guys to fight. There's no one for them to stick around to fight. I believe after that mega fight happens with Floyd and Pacquiao that basically all of these major guys, the heavy hitters, will retire. My dad told me once before, he took me outside and he was like, look how pretty the trees are. You know, he said, I want to teach you something. I'm like, okay, I go outside. He's like, look how pretty these trees are. And I see the trees, there's leaves everywhere. He was like, man, you see how full the trees are? I said, yeah. He was like, well, guess what? This is this tree season. He was like, man, if you come back a couple months from now, you'll see that it's patches in the tree. It'll be gaps. Some of the leaves are going to fall off, and eventually all of them will fall off. And at that point, it's time to just rake your harvest, and then new leaves will sprout. and will bring more beauty to the tree. You know, and I took that towards just my everyday life. Dealing with the boxing, this is basically what's going on in my season. I feel as though that the trees are basically 100% there. The big names aren't there, and it's all new faces that's about to emerge and become the next Floyd Mayweather, the next Roy Jones Jr., the next Pacquiao, you know. And I feel as though this is the time for me to seize that moment, you know. So we are 100% ready.
Yeah, I like that.
That's very well said, man. And you look at it, you know, you look around, maybe like right below you, you've got like Scott Quigg is a guy overseas. I don't think Donaire is going to make it to 126.
I think he's
topped out at 122. But Rigondeaux,
right.
What do you think about that guy?
Oh, he's pretty decent fighter. He's a Cuban guy. I've seen him. We didn't actually get a chance to compete. We were actually in the same weight class in the 2005 World Championships.
Mm-hmm.
I got a bronze medal, and he actually got a gold medal. I wanted to compete against him. I was only 17 years old at the time. That was my first international experience ever. You know, I competed against guys that had gold medals in the previous Olympics and everything, and I came out and I won a bronze. You know, I grew tremendously past that point. I feel as though that youth is on my side. A lot of these guys,
he's older. He's
exactly.
Older. That's,
you know,
that's trip about him. You know, that by the time you guys, it's like, you know, it's worth something for both of you guys to fight. He'll probably be like 31, and you'll be hitting your prime at like 27. You know,
exactly.
And that could be a great fight though down the line. What about Javier Fortuna?
Say it again.
What do you think about this Javier Fortuna?
I really haven't seen too much on him. I heard of him, but I really haven't seen too much on a guy.
His punches are a little wider than yours. I think his power is very real. But that's a guy I think that could. But there's a lot of little. There's a lot of guys Orlandito Del Valle. You know, I think that's another guy that's featherweight's about to get kind of crazy within the next.
Oh
few
yeah,
years.
It's about to get crazy. You know, but I feel as though everyone needs to get out of my way. I'm that unstoppable object. I feel as though where most fighters lack at is where we don't. I feel as that from the amateurs, a lot of these guys think that it's a tremendous level of growth in a fighter over the time. The only thing that really does change is just like a car. The engine and everything is the same. Change the tires, you might get an oil change here and there, but it still has the same frame and, you know, just the same makeup overall. Majority of these fighters that you see as a professional, this is the way that they fought when they were amateurs. They're basically the same fighters. The only changes is, like I say, the headgear is off, the gloves are smaller. They tend to actually create a certain level of poise in the ring, maintain a level of composure like we spoke about earlier. You know, but the basic selection of punches that they did when they were the amateur is basically still the same. The same punch that was probably their best punch when they were the amateur is the same punch that's their best punch as a professional. You know, the same flaws that they had as an amateur, the flaws they would have as a professional. Even when you have these guys that train for a fighter and tries to break their bad habits, when the water gets hot, and you're really getting tested by a true fighter, you tend to fall back into your comfort zone. Your comfort zone is what you're used to naturally doing. So most guys would naturally fall back into doing the same bad habits that they did back then. You know,
yeah,
and these are the things that we pick up on. These are the things that we want to exploit when we compete against guys. A lot of these guys are one-dimensional. You have guys that can box with no punching ability at all. You have guys with tremendous levels of punching power, but has no hand speed at all. You know, so a lot of guys are one-dimensional. We feel as though that we're very versatile in the ring, and that's what's going to take us over the top.
I like a lot of the stuff that you're saying, man. It's very, very intelligent. I like to, when a fighter, you know, points out these certain things and subjects, you know, that is surrounding in their division, you know. But I want to go back to something you said, you know, a fighter when he's very, very – you know, when he's in a hot situation, they revert back into their amateur style. some fans right now listening are right away, and I haven't even checked our Twitter or Facebook, and I don't want to be distracted, but I know already off the top of their head, they're going like, well, when are we going to see you in a hot situation? Because you haven't been in that situation.
Most definitely, and this is the thing. The key is to not ever to allow yourself to get in unfamiliar territory. I'm the type of guy, for Saturday, I was in the gym on Monday. You know, I'm that type of guy that pushes myself to the limit every time. When I train on a very, very high intensity. When I fight, it really isn't intense. We're controlling the pace. We're definitely controlling the pace of the fight. We can make the fight slow as we want. You know, we can make the fight as fast as we want. But we train with a level of intensity that if the water did get hot, it would not be familiar territory for us based on the fact that we are prepared. We are 100% prepared. Preparation is the key. We're 100% prepared in everything that we do. It's our job to stay 4 or 5 steps ahead of our opponent and 4 or 5 steps ahead of the coaches. You know, so we are definitely prepared, man. I can't wait for you guys to actually get a chance to see. Hopefully.
I got to tell you, every time you're announced that you're going to fight, I got to tell you the honest truth. Every time I hear that you're going to fight, I look forward to seeing you get in that ring. The hand speed, your intelligence, I mean, I love it. You know, I think there's going to be some greatness out of you. I can definitely, you know, when we talk about hot prospects, you're way up there, you know. But in the time being of you wanting the Lopez, you know, which could be some time off here, because we don't even know his situation, whether or not he's going to be willing to mix it up with you. Who do you fill in before leading into that fight? Because you got like Teon Kennedy, you got Martin, Christoph Martin, who had his win this couple of weeks ago on Friday Night Fights. And I agree with you with the other guys and what they lack, you know, but the only thing that I see with the other guys is that what they're making up, what they lack in is they're keeping themselves consistent, you know. And do you feel you got to play catch up though with the experience wise and getting these other type of names rather than just going after that bigger name right now? Or what is right now? How are you mapping out what you need to do next?
Oh, most definitely, we don't feel as though we have to play catch up. I feel as though it's not about how fast you run away. It's about who finishes first, you know, and we will definitely finish first regardless of the situation. I think that my skill level, my management team, my coaching staff, I feel as though we are, like I said, we are that unstoppable object. We're not, you know, in a major rush. We're taking things at our own pace. We won't get forced into doing anything that doesn't make sense for us. You know, as far as a mutual agreement thing, we definitely have to have a mutual agreement based on the fact before we compete against anything. Me personally, I feel as though that I can beat just about everyone in my weight division. There's not a doubt in my mind that I would definitely emerge victorious regardless of who is put across the ring from me. You know, but like I said, you have to play the game. You got to play the game. We definitely have to have mutual agreement. So a lot of times it's not just the fighters it's not the fighters or the coaching staff that's holding them back. Sometimes the management team and the coaching staff doesn't really come to a complete mutual agreement as far as would it be the right full fight for us. You know, but I definitely feel that with time, everyone shall see that I will merge victorious and I will be the one that would be the champ.
You know, we have one of our listeners put it out on Twitter. He's asking the question, so I want to ask you this. Adrian Broner, what are your thoughts about him? Before you answer that, though, what do you think he's really coming out as the bad guy. Do you think that's the right way of getting notice, especially how so many fans have kind of like turned on him because of the remarks, or do you think that's the way that you should do it because that would make people come out to see you fight live?
I feel as though to each his own. A lot of people, man, when it comes to just boxing. I mean, I knew Adrian Broner. We actually we came up together in the amateurs. You know, this is what you guys see is who he is. When you see me and when you talk to me, this is who I am.
Right.
But like I say, to each his own. That's how he is as a person. I think he's a decent fighter. He's strong. We come from the same stable with Landis, both by Al Haymon. I still know he's a decent fighter. Would I do some of the things he do? No, it's not in my character. You know, but he's okay.
You think he's as technically sound as you are?
Not at all. I feel as though he has some flaws, but, I mean, he's a young fighter. I believe he's, what, 23 years old. He's a year younger than me. He's a young fighter. He still has room to grow and just to mature. I think a lot of times that a lot of fighters win off at just raw athleticism by being 100% faster or stronger than their opponent. I think that he's one of those guys that went off of athleticism. I feel as though that I watched him fight before, and I would see that when he hurts guys, that when he's trying to finish the guy off, I feel as though that he's a little reckless when it comes to finishing guy off wide shots, real wide shots, and he tends to forget that the other opponent still has gloves on. You know, and that can be very, very dangerous when you're put in there with a guy that always have a puncher's chance, you know. So little stuff like that that people tend to overlook, and I feel as though that he's overlooking as a fighter.
I would agree. There's a lot of guys that I always felt Jermaine Taylor was a guy like that was more athleticism. Andre Durrell is another guy that's kind of more athleticism than pure boxer. Do you think featherweight is going to be where you stay? I've always kind of looked at you maybe moving up to 130 if you know, as you mature.
Most definitely.
I've never seen you as a lightweight, though. Featherweight's going to be?
We definitely have room to grow. You know, when I'm coming down in weight, I stay probably. When I'm coming down in weight, I come down from about 135 or so. So we definitely have room to grow. You know, the older you get, the slower your metabolism gets.
Mm-hmm.
So,
don't I know it.
So, we definitely have room for growth, man. But I will not go up and wait until I actually capture the title at 126.
Yeah.
I figure there's enough names for you to get a title and kind of make some defenses. And almost the way like Shane Mosley did, you know, he was really solidified himself as a lightweight. And then he went up higher. I think there will be enough people for you. Somebody else threw out, like, Izumi Hasegawa. I mean, I don't think people realize how hard it is to make all these fights. You fight here. You're going to be fighting on Showtime or HBO. You know, and if you went over to Japan, you'd be fighting in his hometown. I don't think Hasegawa is coming out here anytime soon. I'd love to see the fight, but, you know, it's a business. And everybody's kind of, there's like the top-ranked brand. There's the Golden Boy brand. It seems like the networks are choosing between them. There's so many other things. Sometimes you got to just be lucky that you are just a fighter. And let me know when I'm fighting and how much am I getting paid, and cool, I'll do it.
But the crazy thing is, man, there's so much more to it than just that.
Yeah.
It's definitely more to it than that, man. We are so, man, a lot of fighters, man, lack being business-minded when it comes to this game, man. And like I say, I'm grateful and blessed, man, that I got God in my life and that I have a smart team around me to actually show me the ropes, man. We're so business-minded just about how we manage our money all the way up into just the decisions and everything we make in our everyday life, man, definitely plays a part. So, man, I'm blessed. I'm grateful.
So you're not looking to get crazy and start setting money on fire. You're like, look, I want to know where my money is, where it's going,
right,
how I'm investing it. You're being smart about it, is what you're telling me.
Most definitely. And then my wife will probably kill me. If I start setting money on fire, my wife, I don't think my wife would like that.
I don't think any woman wouldn't like to see money being put on flames, you know.
Yeah.
Now, hey,
right there.
Gary, if you're talking about in hot water, that's hot water right there. You know, burning money in front of the old lady. That's hot water.
Definitely be in the doghouse.
You're out of your comfort zone when you're in the doghouse, man. You know.
Completely out of my comfort zone.
Well, Gary, you know, thank you so much for giving us your time, man, and for being understanding. We went a little long before, and I just look forward to having you on and really look forward to seeing you fight again, man. It's always a pleasure.
Man, I definitely appreciate you guys having me. And, man, I'm 100% grateful. I look forward to continuing to amaze you guys and keep you entertained.
Hey, cool. Thank you, too. You know, I mean, this is by far I've become one of my favorite interviews to do. A lot of fun speaking to you, and the fans enjoyed it. You know, just keep doing what you're doing, man, and we're always going to keep watching.
Thanks, man. I definitely appreciate it.
All right. Well, take care, man. Next time.
But there you go. Gary Russell here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Had a lot of talk about Wilmar Lopez and what's up next in the future for himself. You know, his thoughts about Adrian Broner. His thoughts about, he's at the moment right now where he needs to blossom. There needs to be a new star in boxing. And he thinks, and he's not thinking, he's saying, hey, I'm ready. I like his analogy of how he's telling us he's going to be ready with the tree and everything, man. I mean, this is a really intelligent kid. I really enjoyed listening and speaking to him and hearing his point of views, you know. And the more and more we talk to these fighters, you know, and sometimes we throw down the hammer of saying, like, oh, why won't this guy just fight this guy? And, you know, you find out there's more just than just saying, okay, let's do it. There is management behind it and promoters that do stand in the way. But at the end of the day, at the end of the day, as a fan, those are not things we want to hear. You know, we just want to see you get in the ring and do your thing. We got some good fights coming up this weekend. You know, Tony the Tiger Thompson, I believe it's this Saturday, he's going to be fighting Vladimir Klitschko. It's the rematch. I got to tell you, man, I'm really looking forward for this rematch here. I think that Vladimir's getting a more established, more fundamental Thompson than he did the first time around. Gabriel, I don't know what your thoughts about that fight, man.
I'm pulling up the fight schedule, actually, as you reel me. I don't think he's got a shot. But I think it's going to be probably the same result. You know, he might be a little more aggressive, which might speed up that result. We'll see. You know, I just don't. It's hard for me to pick against a Klitschko at this point. They're just very dominant fighters, very technically skilled. They understand who they are. Vlad's got ridiculous power just in his jab alone, and he hooks off that jab really well, and then the right hand. I just don't see. I mean, maybe if Tony gets to his chin, but I don't really think of Tony as like a one-punch knockout guy, and everybody still keeps saying, well, Vlad gets shaky, and, you know, you can hit him and freak him out. But I haven't seen that guy in a long time. You know, it's almost been a decade. And so I just see, you know, the same fight as before, probably ending sooner, probably around 8 or 9. You know, Vlad just breaks him down and, boom, gets him out of there around the 9th. Just because Eddie Tony will come to him a little more.
Right, and this is the thing. What I like about this fight is Tony is. I honestly saw that he was overzealous the first time they met. You know, first time they're getting in the ring. I see a more controlled Tony. But the thing too is that with time and length of time, you know, when they have fought, and the length of time where Vladimir, his flaws, they really have been corrected, and that's the dangerous. That's the danger zone that Tony's going to have to get himself in. He's going to have to get him in that zone where you have him now a more comfortable and a more involved champion, meaning that he now knows who he is and what he's supposed to do. And in those flaws, really, we talk about hot water. We had Gary Russell. That hot water obviously threw Vladimir Klitschko into the amateur, you know, stance and starting to throw punches from all angles. And he just spent all that energy too fast where – now he's more comfortable in that hot water. You know, he doesn't mind being scorched. He's fine with that. And that's what Tony's got to overcome. He's got to find a temperature that he's not used to anymore. He's got to find a way of scorching him where he's going to get out of that comfort zone. He's going to have to panic a bit. And that's where Tony may have to leave that comfort zone that he's now in to in order to excel, in order to be victorious over Vladimir Klitschko. One is that jab. He's got to be able to slip it, and he's going to have to be able to take it away from Vladimir Klitschko. The other right, the straight right hand, he's going to have to slip it, and he's going to have to nullify it. He's going to have to take it away. How do you do that thing? Well, you know, you don't circle towards his right hand. You circle away from it. Is that one thing that they practice on? When we had Dante Wilder, which was 2 years ago, Dante Wilder, who's the prospect heavyweight, bronze medalist for Golden Boy, he told us one thing. He goes, the funniest thing is that I'm a big heavyweight. I'm a tall, strong heavyweight, but I've never gotten a call from heavyweights, American heavyweights that are about to face Vladimir Klitschko as a sparring chief partner. And you would think that he would be the number one guy to call because of height. That's one thing you cannot get from a smaller heavyweight or an equally sized heavyweight. You need somebody that's going to be jabbing downwards and throwing straight rights downwards, you know. You need to be comfortable and be okay with that height. I know Thompson's a tall guy himself, but you know, just because you're tall doesn't necessarily mean you're going to perform correctly or successfully against another tall athlete, you know. So there's things that I think the cons and Thompson, I think you're right. It weighs heavy, but I do like this fight a bit more than the first time around. I think that he's probably going to last a lot longer. But I think what's going to happen is that after Vladimir Klitschko just starts dropping those big rights and gets him out of that, you know, I'm a different person, comfort zone, and Thompson starts, you know, reminiscing what happened the first time around, you're going to see that Thompson come out and get laid out.
Yeah, he's getting laid out. I mean, I feel bad because he seems like a nice guy and everything, but I don't know if you got to see this earlier. I'm going to tweet this out right now, but looking at the fight schedule, I realize that, you know, it's on there, but the fight's already happened. It was the Sheen Cameron versus Monty Barrett fight. And I don't know, I think they put the wrong date up. Sorry, I'm lost in scheduling land. But I'm putting it up right now, and it's what they did. I think they put the wrong date on YouTube. But it is a pretty brutal knockout. You got to check it out. I'll be tweeting out in just a second. Monty didn't win. Let me just say that.
Yeah. I was about to say that. Monty didn't win. Yeah, he didn't
win. Oh, yeah. My goodness. It's one of the best knockouts of the year. And there you go. I just tweeted it out for you. And here we go with the weekend fight schedule. July 6th, Friday, 2012, at the Hard Rock Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. Javier Fortuna on ESPN2's Friday Night Fights is the headliner, 19-0 versus Cristobal Cruz, 39-13-3. So this is exactly the kind of fights we always talk about, you know, when you're talking about developing a prospect. Javier is coming off a nice win against Yandel Evans, just blew him out, they get him right back in the ring. And they put him in against a guy that's, you know, Cristobal Cruz is a veteran guy, the journeyman fighter. He's on the other side of the hill. He's a good name. He's durable, guys, and they give experience to Javier. I think he's probably going to get taken out around 6 or 7, unless this kid's really absolutely the goods and just blows through him in 2-3 rounds, which would be, in my opinion, very impressive. But I'm picking Javier.
I'm picking Javier, too. You know, I mean, right now I think, you know, and I like with everything that Gary Russell, man, it's just stuck in my head, you know. When you talk about trees and the leaves and everything, the leaves are really bright and green on Javier Fortuna. So I'm picking him. I think that, you know, Cruz is definitely a good step up for him in terms of putting some rounds in, you know, because Javier's been blowing out some guys. And this is a good different type of match for him to look at. You know, he's going to have a guy that is a little bit more of a grindy fighter. He's going to try to come forward. He's going to try to get his punches in there. But I'm not sure right now in terms of where his career is at for Cruz. Is he going to be able to hold and withstand a tough young kid like Javier who can bang and has speed? So I just don't see that. I just, timing is everything, and this is the perfect timing for Javier to shine.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a good learning experience for him. It's that right kind of fight when you're developing a guy. In support there is Magomed Abdusalamov.
What a nasty straight right that just landed on Monte, man. Oh, my God. Look at his eyes. Poor dude.
Yeah, yeah, and I thought you were excited about how I pronounced Magomed. I'm just all about
like, I'm just looking at Monte's eyes, just counting the ceiling tile, you know, like one, two,
yeah,
three, four,
yeah,
you know, wow.
Who pulled out the rug on me? And he's taking on, he's 14-0 versus Maurice Byarm, 13-1-1. Magomed's an interesting guy. I mean, he seemed to kind of get hit a lot. I thought he was going to be a little more slick than, I didn't expect him to get hit as much as he did in his last fight, but I expect him to win in this. He's got legit power. He's certainly got legit toughness and is able to walk through some shots. I like him to walk the guy down and get, you know, Byarm and probably get him out. Again, you know, Samson, I think, is a solid, has a solid eye for talent, but also for matchmaking. And I'm talking about Samson Lekowitz here, the promoter for both these gentlemen. And so I'm thinking, you know, it's going to go a little longer. I think they're trying to develop this guy. I think he's a solid heavyweight. He's got kind of that Martinez style or that Sarmiento style coming out of that gym. He kind of bounces around on his toes, moves around a lot. And, you know, you got Byron, who's, you know, a Philly fighter. He's a little bit older. He doesn't have a lot of fights, but he's rangy. He's tall. He's also a southpaw. It should be an interesting fight. I think it's likely, you know, I mean, he went the distance with Brian Jennings. So I'm kind of looking at Magomed maybe to get him out of there late in the fight, because I think he's got legit power. I think he's a legit strong guy. Well, we'll see. You know, he's also got kind of nice hands. He's an awkward guy, very strange style.
Mm-hmm.
So, we move forward to Saturday night, where all the big fights are happening. July 7th, Saturday, 2012, at the Stade de Susenberg. We're going to be fighting in Switzerland on Epics. Vladimir Klitschko, 57-3 versus Tony Thompson, 36-2, for the IBF, WBA, and WBA heavyweight championships, and really just the real heavyweight title. Vladimir Klitschko, 57-3, Tony Thompson, 36-2, in a rematch. As I said, I think he just knocks him out in about 8 rounds, somewhere in there, maybe even less, maybe somewhere between 6 and 8.
I don't know, man. I don't – real tough to say just because the temperament that – Vladimir has, you know, he's one of those guys that if it's the rounds are going fine and he's okay with it, of just landing freely, he's going to do it. I would have to go with the later rounds. I would say like 10 or 11 maybe, where he stops him, or, you know, or possibly, which is not, I don't think it's far-fetched to see that the Thompson's corner just go, you know what, bro, it's just, you know, there's our rematch. There's our second time, but you're just not going to pull it off. We need to just pull back and go home.
Yeah, that's true. And anyways, he's not going to win. At the Home Depot Center in Los Angeles, California, later on that evening, at probably my favorite fight venue out here in Southern Cal, on HBO, Nonito Donaire, 28-1, versus Jeffrey Mathubula, 26-3-1 for the WBO junior featherweight title and IBF titles as well. This is going to mark, if Jeffrey wins, it would be the first time in South African boxing history that they had a unified champ, which is kind of interesting. And it's the second time he's actually gone for two belts in one fight. And the first time he didn't come out on the winning end against Celestino Caballero. But this time around, he seemed very confident, man. And a lot bigger than, a lot taller rather than Nonito is. So that, I think it's going to be a problem. I think this is a distance fight. I think Mathubula, he gets stronger as the rounds go on. In the back end of the fight, he really starts to come on, starts to let it go. He likes to counter punch, likes to make you miss. He likes using his height and keeping that stick out there. I think it's going to be a tough fight for Nonito unless he can really slip the jab, get inside, and hurt Mathubula, at least get his respect. But I'm going to go with Donaire. I think if he can handle the guy's power and not get dropped, I think he pulls out a decision.
I think so too. I think Nonito, I think Nonito's worst enemy is himself sometimes in the ring. He can headhunt and just get stuck there, you know, like he just can't seem to switch that off, you know. And if anything, that's gonna favor Methuselah in a lot of ways, because then he's only have to protect one thing. He's not gonna have to worry about the body. He's not gonna have to worry about, you know, punches coming around. He just got to worry about the punches that are coming straight down the line, you know. Hopefully no needle, though, is kind of snapped out of it. Understand he needs the overall of what he's done in the past, you know, like what he did with Darchilian. That's the no needle that's explosive. That's the no needle that can figure out the puzzle that's put in front of him. If he hasn't, he's going to have a tough night with Jeffrey. Jeffrey, though, he's just got to really, really just get on him, on no needle right away, establish his jab, and keep his distance, use his height so that speed doesn't get up on him, you know, with the speed of his hand speed of no needle is when he's up close. That's when he can really use that speed and stuff. But I think Jeffrey, if anything, he's got to be a little cautious because no needle is strong and he's quick. And it's those blinding shots you don't see that gets you the way Monte Barrett looks like right now, looking at the ceiling tiles. So,
yeah, that's brutal, isn't it? I mean, he just got all of it. That's what happened with Cormonti. He got all of it. I think it's a tough fight. I agree with you. I think that Nonito is probably the more versatile guy. Methuselah is a tall guy. He's going to throw a lot of punches. He's going to counter. He's got nice, tricky defense, and he knows how to use all of his attributes. But that's his game. You know, it was a solid game, but that, you know, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to change it up on Nonito. But we'll see. You know, he's got quality cornermen. He's got a quality trainer in Nick Durant. He's an experienced man, very confident guy, very intelligent guy. So they're also natural to the weight class. He's been a 122 pounder for 11 years, you know, in all eight of his pro years. He's a little bit older. He's 33, but he's durable, you know, and he's a strong guy. I think it's gonna be a legit test for Donaire. If he wins, I mean, he's a legit champion there. He's not just some guy that picked up a belt. It's going to be legit off of this fight. I expect fireworks, and I'm really glad that I'm not banned from attending this show. His support is Kelly Pavlik versus Will Rosinski, 39-2 versus 16-1. I think they're just building towards something big with Kelly Pavlik. They're moving towards a championship fight. I think they mentioned Kessler, maybe something like that, that kind of big, but they want a title or a big fight for Kelly Pavlik. Will Rosinski is likely not going to get in the way of those plans.
The talk, too, about getting him on a title, honestly, I'm not mad of the fights that he's getting and stuff like that, because I think Kelly needs to rebuild himself again and just get in those rounds. I honestly don't like the fact they're talking about a championship fight so soon. I mean, why don't you let's take this whole year and maybe half of next year of just getting them back into full form, getting them back the confidence of wanting to have that hunger to be a champion again. You know, to me, it's just because the name is marketable. Sometimes it's a lot easier to get him that title fight so fast because his name is already established, but doesn't necessarily mean that you know, he's up to the task. I just don't think that fighting guys that he's going to be fighting on Saturday night is going to get him prepared for a Mikael Kessler. Not yet.
Yeah, I agree, you know, but we'll see. You know, who knows? I mean, they're talking Mikael Kessler, but you know, he might be, I don't know. We'll see. It's top-ranked guys, they always have something up their sleeve in terms of matchmaking, and they know exactly when to get a guy. I've heard good things about Kelly in the gym. He's just looking sharp. He's got that snap back to him, you know? So,
but you know, going back again is, you know, just like, you know, Kessler, though he was shut out, and I think a lot of people are going to be, you know, fogged about, you know, what Andre Ward did to him, you know, because when Ward shut him out, there was a lot of folks that were saying, he's done, he's no good. But then he comes back and he gives Frotch a hell of a fight, you know, a back and forth, intelligent, sweet science type of fight that I think Kessler is really a problem child for, you know, Pavlik. I mean, if you want to get somebody that's going to be there for the hitting, but it's still going to make it a good fight and a good test, Psycho Bika, to me, is the man that you put him in against.
Yeah. I don't really want to see Psycho Bika anymore. He's kind of rough and tumble. I'm not sure where you go with him. You know, I agree with you, though. I would kind of extend this a little longer and let him marinate a little bit more. But, you know, I don't know. we'll see. I think he's going to knock out Rozinski in about eight rounds, maybe less, maybe four.
Right.
And somewhere between four and eight, he's going out. If he does it before that, maybe they do take something else that's a little more stay busy, put it on the Chavez card. You know, we'll see. In support there, we got Vanas Martirosyan, 32-0, versus Ryan Davis, 24-9-3. And Andy Ruiz is another highlight on that card. He's 14-0, taking on Jonte Willis. He's a little heavyweight prospect that I really like. Real nice guy. Brad Solomon versus Hector Munoz, 27-1, versus 17-0. Brad Solomon, 17-0. And also Jose Roman, 13-0, versus Rodolfo Armenta, 11-7-1. This could be a fun card out there at the Home Depot Center. I'm looking forward to every one of those fights. At the Hangar in Costa Mesa, California, on Fox Sports, Yuri Gonzalez, 22-1, versus Jesus Soto Caraz, 25-7-3. In support there, we've got Francisco Vargas, 11-0-1, versus Irving Torres, 9-2. At the Motor Point Arena in Sheffield, England, Kell Brook, 27-0, versus Carson Jones, 34-8-2. I think this is a great fight.
Great fight.
Excited by this. Dude, I mean, Carson is you don't look at the record, you know, because it's misleading. He's very experienced. He's very tricky. And those losses might actually be pluses for him because he's learned a lot from them. Kell Brook, I think he's a real deal. We're going to find out just how real he is. It's a very losable fight for him, very winnable fight for Carson Jones. I'm going to go with the chalk. I'm going to go with Kell Brook by decision. But it's going to be a tough, hard-fought fight.
You know, if anything, if there was any advice for – you know, for Jones, is just go back to Kell Brook's performance here in the States, where he could sometimes his attention span for sometimes can just divert and go somewhere else. I don't know what happens with him sometimes, but you see it in a couple of his fights where his mind wanders. And when you see a fighter that does that, and if you're Jones, those are the moments you need to capitalize on. Those are the moments you can see a meltdown. Those are the moments you can make sure that you're going to be up on that scorecard. I don't know how much up on the scorecard you can be, but you can make those rounds a lot more closer than would be said at the end of the fight, you know. But I think Kell Brook, I think you're right. You know, he's a big, strong, kid. I don't see him making a whole lot of mistakes. If anybody's going to be taking risks, it's going to be Jones. And sometimes when you take risks with a tall, big, strong guy like Brook, there's going to have to be that heavy price, you know. And that price is to go home the loser. So it really depends. Do all the stars line up for him, for Jones on that night? There's a huge possibility it can, because he is a live underdog in this bout. But just alone, this is the comfort. We talk about comfort zone, you know, and we've talked about that a lot today here on the show. This is Brooks' comfort zone. He's fighting a place where he's comfortable. He's fighting a place where the support's going to be thick. Jones going in is a no man in this fight. And if you know, the word of no man is a guy that just goes from here to there and there. It's basically where he's going right now. He's going to a spot he hasn't been to, and he's going right now, he's going to a fight that he hasn't had a country backing him up. So he's a no man in this bout.
Yeah, it doesn't make – I think it's just going to be – it's going to be a back and forth, and I see a long, hard fight. I don't see it being easy at all. And I do wonder about – the one thing with Brook, I wonder if that power is real, and I want to see him get, you know, smacked in the face by somebody that can really hit. I think those questions, you know, can be answered a bit in this fight. It's definitely not one that you can box wreck and go, oh, Brook has got eight losses, you know, he's going to suck, you know. I mean, he's got legitimate experience. I think he's got legitimate power. He's going to put it on Kell Brook. I mean, this is certainly one you could call for the upset special, and no one would look at you and say, you're crazy. But I like Brook's movement. I like his ring smarts. I like his defense. I like his really strong jab. You know, he doesn't always use it, but when he does, it's with purpose. I think this is going to be his night, but
yeah,
as you can tell by the way I'm laying it out, I'm not that confident. You know, Carson Jones could very well get him. Okay.
Yeah, he can. I mean, he can really sneak in there and just you know, really take over. And when you talk about that jab, and that's one of the things I'm mentioning and talking about his mind wonders, is that that jab, when it disappears, you could see it in his face. He's like, I don't know what to do anymore. You know, I've done everything. I'm doing it right. But it's now, it's like, it's almost like a boring factor for him. So that's where Jones has got to just jump all over him, man. But yeah, we'll see what happens on Saturday night.
Yep. And support is going to be a rematch of a very, very good fight. I don't know if you caught it the first time around. Gregor Sproxa, 26-1, versus Kerry Hope, 17-3. Hope is the reason that Proxa has a one next to his 26. The first time it ended, you know, there was a headbutt, and I think Kerry Hope lost a point for that butt. It was opened a nasty cut on Proxa, who basically got to see his blood for the first time in a professional fight, and that was, you know, but beyond that, I think Kerry Hope just really fought an excellent fight, and it really took it to him. Nobody expected that. Pretty much everyone gave him no hope. Can he do it again? Did Proxa learn from that first fight? Is that cut not going to reopen and be a problem for the rest of his career? So it'll be great questions that are all going to be answered on Saturday night and or during the day for us. What I'm hoping is that this, I can see this card and it times out just right, so I can see at least both those fights and then be able to head off to the Home Depot Center, because I'm probably looking forward to these two fights as much as any fights I'm looking forward to all weekend long. For the rest of that card, you got Gavin Reese, 36-1-1, Derry Matthews, 36-1, no picks there. And at the Hand Arena in Clifton, England, Tyson Fury, 18-0, takes on Vinny Matalone, 35-7. There should be an all-action fight that Matalone will lose by knockout. And finally, in La Paz, Mexico. Yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, Vinny. You know, you know what you're going to get, but he ain't going to win.
Right.
You got Hugo Ruiz, 30-1, versus Julio Ceja, 19-0. Bantamweights in action. And that's your weekend fight schedule.
Well, there you go. Here on Leaving the Ring. I hope everybody enjoyed the show. You know, like I say all the time, I always have fun when I'm on here. Hey, be sure to come out and support this boxing charity event that we're going to be going out and broadcasting live. It's going to be in Folsom, California at the Powerhouse Pub. And you can... it's on Saturday, July 14th. They are going to be showing the fights live over there before we go on the broadcasting live. So it starts at 8 o'clock until the cops come knocking and shut us down. Tickets is $25 each. It's $30 at the door, but it includes two premium cigars, scotch, and rum. This is a 21-over event. There's going to be live music. We're going to have fighters out there to meet and greet, and there's going to be a silent auction, and they're going to have a raffle for T-shirts and posters and hats, and then you're going to have yours truly, Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya, doing a live broadcasting of Leave It in the Ring. So go out, get your tickets, 916-947-6065 or 916-672-1867. Come on out, man. Let's hang out. Let's have a cup of brewski and let's talk boxing live on Leaving the Ring. Again, man, be careful. Don't drink and drive over the weekend and enjoy the fights and your family.
All right, man. Another just fun show, and I'll catch up with you this weekend, man. And I'm looking forward to this charity event. It's going to be fun meeting people and giving back to the sport a little bit. So,
absolutely.
Dave, I'll catch you next week.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you later.